Ramayah is from Youth Employment UK.
Employers, even if they do want to take on young people, the simple cost of doing business is getting so high for them, with national insurance contribution increases and other kind of sharp increases in inflationary pressures on them.
Plus, the pancake gag that fell as flat as the economy.
Chancellor, I've got something for you.
Oh, very good.
Come in. Happy pancake day.
Thank you very much, Prime Minister. Are you going to have one as
I
well?
I like it. That's what I keep in here.
I believe the modern-day word is orcs. You can see it on LBC, and I'll be asking, why don't they just concentrate on their day jobs and follow those appalling jokes? News is next on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock, Essex Police says it's assessing allegations that Jeffrey Epstein used private flights into Stansted Airport to traffic women. The former Prime Minister Gordon Brown has called for an inquiry, claiming authorities had little idea who was travelling through the UK. 90 flights linked to Epstein reportedly arrived or departed from UK airports between the 1990s and 2018. Juliet Bryant says she was trafficked by Epstein from South Africa to the United States and says she wants justice for other survivors.
I was really, really petrified. You know, it really changed me, the whole thing, you know, going through this. And I just didn't know what to do, and I just really thought that I was going to die.
Stansted says it doesn't manage or have visibility of passenger arrangements on privately operated aircrafts. The head of the National Crime Agency is urging technology companies to do more to tackle online child abuse. Rob Jones says around 1,000 suspects are being arrested every month, with reports of abuse roughly doubling over 3 years. Sir Keir Starmer is due to make his first appearance since the government abandoned plans to postpone dozens of May's council elections in England. It's the 14th U-turn since Sir Keir became Prime Minister, with the Conservatives calling it predictable chaos. The Prime Minister is due in Wales later to announce plans to modernise the rail network. One of the country's leading psychiatrists has warned that there's a silent mental health pandemic in England. Dr. Laddie Smith says people can't get the help needed because of overwhelmed or under-resourced services. Dr. Smith says there is a risk that the problem could spiral out of control.
The thing about these conditions is that they primarily affect young people. 75% arise before the age of 24, 50% before the age of 14. And that means that they have a much greater, profound and much more long-lasting effect on people's lives. It's really clear that this is significantly affecting not only these individuals' lives, it's affecting the productivity of the country and therefore the economic growth of the country.
The government says it's invested an extra £688 million this year in mental health services. And pedicabs in London are now regulated for the first time. It follows complaints about bad driving, overcharging and antisocial behaviour. Transport for London says drivers will now have to have a licence, pass a safety test and hold a driving theory test certificate. In the city, the FTSE 100 will reopen later at 10,556 after closing up 82 yesterday. The pound buys $1.35 and €1.14. LBC weather dry across Scotland and northern and eastern England with some sunshine. Outbreaks of rain and hill snow. Elsewhere, a high of 11 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Wellness. What even is wellness? Cleanses, routines, regimes, biohacks, stacks, schedules, procedures, programs. I suppose so. But can it just be a cup of... Pukka Herbal Tea. Ah, Pukka. Nothing beats nature.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Morning, 4 minutes after seven, Wednesday, February the 18th. Reforms, reform in the field of DEI, diversity, equity and inclusion policies. I'll be asking you, what have they ever done for you? Would you be nervous without them? Have they helped you in your workplace, possibly somewhere else? We'll explain, of course, exactly how it works. In other news, a big change coming down the tracks for dual nationals entering the UK. Explained here by Head of Travel at The Sun, Lisa Minow.
Anyone who has dual nationality, they will have to have either a British passport or they will have to have this £589 certificate entitlement that they attach to their foreign passport.
Almost like an Agatha Christie novel, isn't it? And then there were seven. That's the number of police forces. One newspaper, The Sun, is saying is investigating former Prince Andrew, now Andrew Mountbatten Windsor. Yet another one, Essex, joining. We'll go through those forces and ask how much longer before a decision could be taken. Plus,
my mum, Jane Presley, died after contracting a suspected gastric illness while on holiday in Cape Verde. I want to stop the same from happening to others. My name's Lucy Ambrose, and I'll be speaking to Nick later in the show.
Yes, a truly horrific story there. Figures that shock the nation and shame the government. One in six 18 to 24-year-olds are out of work. As we told you earlier, this is the highest figure across the whole of Europe. We'll look at that and again ask you, if that is you, or your daughters, your sons, your children, whatever it might be, what are they trying to do? There are people here, by the way, young people who applied for hundreds, and I mean hundreds, 300, 400, 500 jobs and get nowhere. And in other news,
there's going to be a huge crackdown on London's unruly pedicabs after I got kicked off one by a rider who ran a red light. I'm LBC's Joseph Draper with the details.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Nigel Farage and his famous five were on parade yesterday. He assembled his effectively his shadow cabinet, one of whom, of course, is the former Conservative Suella Braverman, who talked about getting rid of DEI. These are diversity, equity and inclusion policies. At the Reform UK press conference yesterday, my colleague LBC's political editor, Natasha Clark, who's in the studio with me now. Natasha, good morning. What did you learn yesterday?
Good morning. Well, I got an absolute earful from Nigel Farage. That's what I learned yesterday, which is, you know, always good to robustly hold politicians to account.
That means you got under his skin, I suggest.
Exactly, which we trust is a good thing. But yes, some big jobs yesterday for some very big personalities. The Reform Party used a glitzy US-style rally yesterday to reveal what they call their shadow cabinet. Nigel Farage started by explaining he wanted his party to be about more than just him.
Too often, the criticism over the last 20 months has been that we're a one-man band, to which I generally respond by saying, well, it's better than being a no-man band. But the time has come to broaden the party, to put in place people in shadow positions, and that process begins today.
And in that lineup were two jobs for two former Tories who have defected very recently. The former Home Secretary Suella Braverman will take over the job of education and skills if Reform win.
Instead of Tony Blair's 50% of young people going to university, this is what we need. We need Nigel Farage's 50% of young people going into the trades. That's what will produce the next generation of carpenters, electricians and technicians that our country is crying out for. And these will be the people who rebuild Britain.
And she made some very big promises for what Reform would do on day one.
We will get rid of the Equalities Department. We will scrap the Equalities Minister. Yeah, I'm doing myself out of the job. And we will repeal the Equality Act. Because we are going to work to build a country defined by meritocracy, not tokenism.
Now, Nick, you'll know, of course, the Equality Act protects people against discrimination on the grounds of issues including age, disability, race, religion, belief. Braverman says that Reform wants to rip this up completely. She says Britain is being ripped apart by diversity, equality and inclusion policies. That has got some major pushback already. Reform have been accused of chasing the votes of misogynists and homophobes, and charities say this would be a significant step backwards. Meanwhile, another top job for another former Tory, Robert Jenrick, got the much sought-after role of Shadow Chancellor, despite being in the party for just a few weeks.
Everyone in the country feels hard up right now. People are working all hours, and then they get to the weekend, and they've got nothing left.
So I asked Nigel Farage if he was happy enough with Robert Jenrick's business experience.
I have worked in the private sector. In fact, I only worked in the private sector before coming into Parliament. I worked in the city as a lawyer. I worked in business, helping to run a great British business. And I've served in government and around the cabinet table, including in the Treasury. I'm proud of what I've done. I believe I bring experience to this team.
This is where I got a little quiz. Do you know what Robert Jenrick did at Christie's? Do you know?
So Christie's is an auction.
Exactly. And that was Robert Jenrick did before he went on to serve as a politician. Meanwhile, the policy spokesperson, Zia Yusuf, will now take on the Home Affairs brief, including that very extreme deportations and immigration policy.
Britain has been overwhelmed by immigration, both legal and illegal.
And Richard Tice as energy, business and trade. He is now calling himself the Deputy Prime Minister in waiting.
Oil and gas, offshore, onshore, and having the courage to get rid of the madness of what we've politely coined net stupid zero.
Now, Nigel Farage says that this is just the start. There is no foreign affairs spokesperson, no defence spokesperson, or even a health one yet. So this is all just a bit of a show to try and paint Reform as the official opposition. Just a reminder, Nick, they have 8 MPs, not the 120 or so that the Tories have. But Nigel Farage hopes that this is the end of the one-man band and shows the public a little bit more about what a Reform government might look like.
Natasha Clark, LBC's political editor of reporting. Let's turn straight to Paul Novak, who's General Secretary of the TUC. Good to have you on, Paul. Trust you and everyone is well. What do DEI policies allow for or protect in the workplace, in your view? Morning, Paul.
Well, morning, Nick. Well, I think we should just be clear. I think what Suella Braverman confirmed yesterday is that Reform just think that discrimination should be legal. That Equality Act provides legal protection for everybody at work against discrimination. And what Reform would effectively do is give a blank check to bad employers. So what does that look like?
There aren't other policies on the statute book that provide for that as well, Paul?
This is comprehensive legislation that provides basic protections at work, but also access to things like public services. And when we go into the shops to make sure that we're not discriminated against. And let's be clear what this means. It means that an employer could sack a pregnant woman just because they're pregnant. And that would be entirely legal. It means that an employer could deny somebody a promotion
but surely an employment tribunal would step in there, Paul Novak. No,
but an employment tribunal requires that basic legislation to act against, Nick, and that's what the Equality Act is. And what this basically is sending out a message to bad employers that it's okay to treat staff with contempt, to deliberately discriminate against them or victimise them or harass them. It's a bully's charter. And I think all of us should be worried, Nick, because this affects every single worker in the UK.
At its worst, what do you fear could happen, Paul?
Well, as I say, Nick, I feel it would just give a blank check to employers to act with complete impunity. And, you know, we already know, for example, 1 in 10 women report that they suffer discrimination at work because they're pregnant. Mm. They're either sacked, they lose access to promotion, they're treated unfairly. This would just say, well, that's legal. That's legal now. And I think it sends a chilling effect much more broadly. And as I say, I think everybody should be worried. We will all be affected by Reform's attacks on these basic rights.
Lastly, before I let you go, you're probably aware of another major story today. 1 in 6 18 to 24 year olds are out of work. The figure puts us now in the highest across the whole of Europe. As General Secretary of the TUC, you'll have a view on that, Paul Novak.
Yeah, absolutely, Nick. I mean, none of us can be happy about the fact that nearly 1 million young people aren't in work, aren't in education or in training, but it's important that we put in place the right support to get them into work. I mean, just talk about apprenticeships there. And Suella Braverman talked about the trades. She didn't set out anything practical to help people get out into the trades, but you know, if you think about apprenticeships, barely 1 in 2 young people complete those apprenticeships because we've had a wild west of apprenticeship standards, employers not living up to their obligations. I think that we need to do everything, including the government's youth jobs guarantee, to support those young people into work and crucially into good quality work as well, Nick, because what we quite often have is young people cycling in and out of 0 hours contracts, low paid jobs, and that's not good for them and it's not good for the economy.
Grateful for your time, Paul Novak, your General Secretary of the TUC. Listening at 13 minutes after 7 is Maria Caulfield, who served as a minister in the Conservative government but defected to Reform UK towards September last year and joins me now. This, to quote Mr Novak, is a bully's charter. Do you support it? Good morning.
Yeah, I mean, I absolutely do support it. It's not working for ordinary people up and down this country. You know, there's 9 protected characteristics, several of which are opposed to each other. So we've had many cases recently, say, of nurses at work trying to access single-sex spaces, and the Equality Act has been used against them. We've got, you know, Christian people being arrested for praying silently in the street, yet religion or belief is supposed to be a protected characteristic. We've got white working-class boys, the most deprived group, underperforming in our schools in this country, and the Equality Act is supposed to be able to represent people so that doesn't happen. It is not working in practice. And so, you know, reform of that system needs to happen. And I welcome the open and honest debate about this.
But as a former Minister for Women, when you hear the General Secretary of the TUC means that it would allow bosses to sack a woman simply for getting pregnant, how can you possibly support that?
No, it absolutely wouldn't. There is legislation in place.
You must have heard it, Maria Caulfield. You did hear what...
I absolutely did. Right, but, you know, there's legislation in place to protect women in the workplace, particularly during pregnancy and maternity leave. The Equality Act It is not the fundamental part of that. But what, you know, we are seeing women discriminated against now in the workplace, and the Equality Act very rarely is there to support them. And, you know, this is just an excuse from unions, really, because, you know, he talked about unemployment. Well, actually, Labour's policies of increasing business rates, of national insurance rises, have led to a massive rise of unemployment. Nothing to do with reforms plans to scrap the Equality Act.
Finally, Maria Caulfield, we've spoken on a number of occasions in the past, and, you know, I've enjoyed our interviews, but does this not just underscore completely the idea that reform, this is dog whistle politics going after these DEI policies? This is exactly what your critics want you, not you personally, want your party to do, isn't it? And you've fallen into the trap.
No, I don't think it is. I think if you speak to the ordinary man and woman in the street, if you talk to self-employed business people, they are, you know, completely wrapped up in red tape and bureaucracy. And the Equality Act is part of that. And I think if you spoke to ordinary people, do they feel the Equality Act stands up for them when they most need it? It absolutely doesn't. Right. This is about, you know, not scrapping rights. It's about reforming the system that isn't working for ordinary people up and down this country.
Well, we're about to find out, because I'm going to speak with those ordinary people and we'll see how we do. Maria Caulfield, thank you. You're former health minister under the Conservative government. You defected to Reform UK in September of last year. Right, coming over to you. So farewell to Equality, says Reform UK. I don't know if that's their wisest move, but what say you? That's far more important. We'll take your calls. And one newspaper, The Sun, says we now get to seven police forces investigating Andrew Mountbatten Windsor. I'll listen for you after the news. Essex Police being the latest force. Juliet Bryant was one of Epstein's victims. She says she wants justice.
I was really, really petrified. You know, it really changed me, the whole thing, you know, going through this. And I just didn't know what to do. And I just really thought that I was going to die.
More on that after this. 7:16 LBC News headlines then. Dominic Ellis.
Essex Police says it's looking into allegations that Jeffrey Epstein used private flights into Stansted Airport to traffic women. Figures just out show the rate of inflation fell to 3% in January, compared with 3.4% the previous month. And one of the country's leading psychiatrists has warned that there's a silent mental health pandemic in England. LBC weather dry across Scotland and northern and eastern England with some sunshine. Outbreaks of rain elsewhere, a high of 11 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. The M4 is closed both ways between junctions 11 at the A33 and junction 10 at the A329M. It's because the emergency works are still taking place, and as a result there are delays, and it's also very busy on the A329M as traffic diverts. The South Circular Road's just been closed both ways at Eltham, and that's following an accident. Queues on the A13 westbound to the Gawsbrook interchange, and that's where a lorry's broken down. In Kilburn, Quecks Road remains closed both ways because of the ongoing investigation. On the underground, because of the ongoing strike, there are severe delays on the Piccadilly line to and from Acton Town to both Heathrow and Uxbridge, and then there are minor delays on the rest of the line.
This is LBC.
The Cupra Drive event is back. On top of existing offers, get £1,000 off across the range, including the dynamic Cupra 4Mentor, the sporty Cupra Terramar, and the daring Cupra Leon. Just order by 31st of March and collect by 30th of June. Follow your impulse. Search Cupra Drive Event. T's and C's and exclusions apply. UK retail customers 18 plus. New vehicles only. Subject to availability. Saving including VAT apply to the on-the-road price.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. LBC.
Train to Cambridge and then all aboard the paddleboards. A little bit different, should be fun. Or wobbly, or wet.
The wetsuit's a good look on you, Steve.
Oh, actually, this is very relaxed.
George is up the river cam without a paddle.
Train home, that was such a laugh. I think I might even have a new hobby. Download the Thames Link Railway app to book tickets and save a third off group travel on off-peak journeys. Thames Link Railway, where every stop is a story.
The Hillary sale ends soon, so get window wise and grab these amazing offers while you still can. Like up to 50% off hundreds of made-to-measure blinds, curtains and shutters. Plus, grab £50 off your electric blind order and conveniently control your blinds for less. And don't forget, with Hillary's, measuring and fitting is always included. So get window wise and book your free in-home appointment today at hillarys.co.uk. But hurry, the Hillary sale ends on the 9th of March. Conditions apply.
Okay, done. Move that. And... oh, new ways to invest.
Okay.
Foolproof guaranteed returns. Invest today.
All right, I think I will.
Way before you seal the deal, check if it's real and if a company's authorised by the FCA.
Oh, thanks.
Search FCA Firm Checker.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
20 after 7, coming to your calls. Rudy, you were through first to talk about reform. Quick look at some of the front pages. I won't give them all to you. The Daily Mirror goes with the story. Now, remember, of course, the Daily Mirror is very much a Labour-supporting newspaper, which it has every right to do. So their front page picture is of the five, the famous five of Farage's famous five of reform. No laughing matter, as all of them appear to be giggling or smiling or laughing or joking as their centre stage. So they splash with that. The main story for the other newspapers, and I will run through them, all the police forces now involved, seven UK forces on the Epstein case is the front page of The Sun. Pressure piles on Andrews, fourth police force probes Epstein claims is the front page of the Daily Mail. Truth is, it's probably between the two somewhere. And oh, no, God, I don't believe it. The I newspaper, this is extraordinary. Third police force examines Andrews' links to Epstein. So that's three, four or seven. We'll try and find out what the reality is. Lastly, this story, not for a moment wishing to lessen the severity, but after the horrific frog toxin poisoning of Alexei Navalny, the front page of the Metro, Putin critic, I never touch a door handle, and it's not paranoia. Well, how does a bloke ever get out of a room? I mean, is he trapped in his room now, notwithstanding the horror of that story? That shows how frightened people are. The LBC app, and that is, again, the Prince... the Andrew Mountbatten Windsor story. Epstein's Lolita Express flights to Britain are assessed by police. And let's pick one other story. Oh, it's all about Prince... it's all about Andrew Mountbatten Windsor, isn't it? Oh, here we go. I've got something else. Sky News getting excited about apparently a row at the Winter Olympics involving the British curling team. Not quite fully across that one, but let's hope if there's medals about... they can seize one. Right, let's get into the conversation. Rudy's in Bristol. What have these DEI policies ever done for you? Good morning.
I think they're absolutely a waste of time. Now, the fact is this, Nick, right, if you were on an aeroplane...
Yes.
...would you want the best pilot on the plane or someone because of their race or colour due to diversity?
Well, I don't...
Which would you prefer?
I can't believe that any airline would simply employ someone because they were of Asian origin or they were mixed race.
But they are.
Rudy, you've got to back up the assertion that airlines are knowingly employing lesser skilled pilots because of their ethnicity. Where do you get that from?
I'm just saying that as metaphorically. I'm saying it, but across the board, I'm just highlighting that as an example. Would you prefer... if they had to tick a box to employ someone rather than for their skill?
No, obviously I want the most skill, but I don't... I get the point you're making, but I don't... Where is the evidence that they're knowingly employing lesser-skilled pilots because, for the purpose of debate, it's a woman or it's an Asian
person?
Well,
can I give you an example of something else?
No, I do really, yes.
I'm not going to name them, OK?
OK, go ahead.
Right, OK. My brother applied for a job for a certain... company in the UK, massive, right? Huge mm-hmm. company, billions of dollars, right? And he applied and he never even got an interview. Mm-hmm. He sent the same CV, said he was homosexual, and they gave him an interview straight away.
Okay. I mean, obviously, again, I don't have experience with that, and I'm grateful that you haven't named the company. I have to take that on merit, on your evidence. What are you suggesting that says, that companies are only knowingly employing homosexuals?
No, I'm saying they're ticking boxes to be within the criteria. But, they're box ticking.
But does it not concern you to go to the other extreme if we take the word of the General Secretary of the TUC, and one would hope he knows a few things about the workplace, the airline that you cited can sack a female pilot because she's got pregnant? You can't possibly
No, I don't agree with that. But that's not inclusivity. I mean, so a woman being pregnant can be any race or anything like that, right? Mm. So that's not the same thing. You're not comparing apples with oranges, you know. That is a completely different situation in that. But if you're employing someone to tick a box, which a lot of employers have to, then that is wrong.
I agree with you, but you've not actually given me any robust evidence as yet. I hear what you say about your brother, but again, I take your word on that, Rudy, and we've spoken many times in the past, and, you know, we've talked about a mythical airline. Is it all not just some of this sort of urban myth?
No, I mean, you only have to look at the government. I mean, what diversity has done for them. I mean, look who they've got on the front bench, can't even write his own name.
Who are you talking about now? Who can't write their own name?
David Lammy. I mean.
I know David Lammy. He can write it. I don't. Okay, Rudy, I've enjoyed talking with you. I would suggest that many people on the front bench are equally incompetent, irrespective of their skin colour. They seem to have reached an extraordinary low base. I say again, black, white, and Asian, whoever is on there. Really, an interesting way to start, and we will continue that conversation. But it does speak possibly to the importance of those laws. We'll talk about that more. 7:25. Now, as I said, well, he pays your money and he takes your choice. There's a number of police forces now investigating Andrew Mountbatten Windsor. For the Eye, it's the 3rd. For the Daily Mail, it's the 4th. And for the Sun, it's the 7th. And the Sun do list them. They claim Essex police yesterday, as a result of activities that might or might not have taken place concerning Stansted Airport, which is, of course, in that county, they joined Surrey, Bedfordshire, Norfolk, Thames Valley, Wiltshire, and obviously the Met. Well, whichever way you cut it, it's getting pretty tough or pretty hot for a man who apparently can't sweat. Andrew Lowney is a royal biographer and author of Entitled, The Rise and Fall of the House of York. And my goodness me, hasn't that proved a prescient piece of work as this all collapses around us? And he joins me now. Good to have you on, Andrew. What do you take from the latest news regarding the Essex Force then? Morning to you.
Well, I'm delighted because I've been calling for police investigation for a long time. I mean, I think actually it should be coordinated by the National Crime Agency. And I have offered my material to the crime agency. No one has responded yet to me. But this is good. I didn't think this was going to happen. And I think it does show that there is not a law for the royals and a law for everyone else. But let's hope that this is pursued. I mean, they were very keen, clearly, to come after Peter Mandelson quickly. And I hope they will do the same with Prince Andrew, because the evidence now is overwhelming, both the sex trafficking and the misconduct of public office.
What do you imagine is going on in the court of King Charles over this, Andrew?
Well, I have my reservations that he really is cooperating with the police. I know that they tried to suppress this story for years, denying it, sending legal threats, strong-arm tactics. Peter Loughborough, who was the head of Royal Protection, was basically sent to shut the story down over many years. And I'm certainly aware of letters being sent to policemen reminding them of their obligations of confidentiality. So I do hope that the palace will cooperate. I mean, they know everything. All the police protection officers, the valets, the equerries, the secretaries have the full details. You know, they should have provided this material before. I do hope they will now be allowed to provide it to the investigating authorities. I think the problem is that the royal family don't want a trial. They don't want this dirty linen aired in public. So I suspect we'll get to a point of charges being pressed and Andrew being somewhere in the Middle East with a country with no extradition treaty, and that he won't really face justice.
That's interesting. Lastly, few, if any, journalists or authors know Andrew Mountbatten Windsor and his court as well as you. What has surprised you the most from the Epstein files, the 3 million documents?
Well, just how shameless the way he operated in terms of trying to get a bit of the action whenever he was doing any work, and the fact that so many other people were involved. I mean, the other thing I think we need, apart from the police investigation, is a parliamentary inquiry with all those people who didn't talk to me. They said they weren't interested. So the former heads of UKTI, the ambassadors in Azerbaijan and Kazakhstan, these people enabled Andrew and allowed him to operate in the way he did. So this isn't just Andrew on his own. It's the whole network, I'm afraid.
Grateful for your time as ever, Andrew. Thanks for coming on the show. Andrew Lowney, royal biographer. Of course, that book, bestseller, Entitled, The Rise and Fall of the House of York. My goodness me, that's definitely worth a read if you're following the Epstein files. 3 million documents. And the latest force, it is alleged, 90 flights in and out of Stansted in Essex. And as the Sun say, that takes it to... I mean, how much longer can this go on? Without the one force saying, yeah, look, we need to interview Andrew Mountbatten Windsor. Everything leads us. We need to have a conversation with him. Let's come back to events involving Reform UK and Reform's reform as regards the Equality Act. Mike in Crawley. So now we know the reveal of what we can now call Reform's retreads. It is interesting, isn't it? When you look at the photographs of those five, two of them, Suella Braverman and Robert Jenrick, both former prominent Conservatives. I think one, what's that Oscar Wilde quote, one is can be a misfortune or something, one is okay, well, two is a misfortune, I can't remember what it is. But you know what I'm saying, did they need two? Aaron in Preston, for all those aged 55 and over who are likely to want to vote for reform, just know that by voting for them, they're also voting for a world whereby repealing the Equality Act will allow employers to forcibly retire you from your job. Is that a world they would want to keep them coming? Now, coming up after the news, the rate of CPI inflation, consumer price index inflation, has fallen to 3%. That's a drop from 3.4. We'll have more on that in our regular roundup of the world of finance. And to events elsewhere. Speaking yesterday following the latest round of talks with the US, Iran's Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi said Iran is not afraid to defend itself.
We are hopeful that negotiation will lead to a sustainable and negotiated solution. At the same time, Iran remains fully prepared to defend itself against any threat.
And we'll have more on that after this. 7:30, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, here on LBC. Let's get the news headlines from Dominic Ellis.
Police are assessing allegations women and girls are trafficked through the UK on Jeffrey Epstein's private jet. Former Prime Minister Gordon Brown has been leading calls for an inquiry, claiming that authorities had little idea who was travelling through the country. Official figures show the rate of inflation fell sharply to 3% in the year to January. That's down from 3.4% the previous month. Inflation remains above the Bank of England's 2% target. And one of the country's leading psychiatrists has warned that there's a silent mental health pandemic in England. Dr. Laddie Smith says people can't get the help needed because of overwhelmed and under-resourced services. LBC weather dry across Scotland and northern and eastern England with some sunshine. Outbreaks of rain elsewhere. A high of 11 degrees.
On the latest episode of The News Agents.
The royal family and the police. Have they got too close? Is the relationship going to change? And were the police covering up the behaviour of Andrew Mountbatten Windsor?
Get the latest episode of The News Agents with Emily Maitlis, John Sokol and Lewis Goodall. Listen or watch on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? A record 9 years running.
You've built a career.
You've faced the challenges.
You've gained the skills to do more.
To stretch your abilities.
And help support your community.
At Hampshire and Isle of Wight Constabulary, we value life experience.
So whether your experience comes from business, healthcare, the trades, or raising a family,
your next challenge is waiting for you. Search Hampshire Police Jobs and join Hampshire and Isle of Wight Constabulary.
Money Super 7, our mission continues. How are we helping people save today?
We could help people save up to £193 on their home insurance.
Good start. What else?
They could also switch their car insurance with us. We've got some great deals. How's that for a day's work?
Impressive, but it's not home time yet, Money Super 7.
See how much you could save with Money Supermarket. 51% could save up to £193. Consumer intelligence, buildings and contents. November 2025, 17 plus UK only.
When an offender is released, the probation service keeps them on track so they can find a place to live, which gives them the stability to say no to old habits, making them more likely to attend their supervision meetings. And all of that ripples out to make the community a better place to live. Hello, mate. Search probation service jobs to find out more. An extraordinary job done by someone like you.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
My thanks to Piers in Kent, 7:33. The quote I was looking for is, of course, the famous, to lose one may be regarded as a misfortune, to lose two looks like carelessness. To have one former senior Conservative in your shadow cabinet, as they're calling it, or the leadership of Reform UK is a misfortune too. I don't know. It's an odd look. We'll come back to that conversation in a moment. Now, let's get into news of the world of business and finance. Some figures dropped earlier this morning, and as ever, Christian May will give us the figures, editor-in-chief at City AM will give us what those figures are, and then tell us exactly what they mean. Is it good news we're hearing, Christian? Morning to you.
Good morning, Nick. Yes, I think it is good news. It's a big drop in the fall, the headline rate of inflation in the UK, down from 3.4% to 3%. That's a big monthly fall. And you know, most economists had baked it in, had been expecting it, having been looking at the trajectory. But it brings inflation down to its lowest level in the UK since March last year. The government will be relieved. I suspect they'll be delighted. In fact, we've heard from the Chancellor this morning saying, yippee. Actually, that's not what she quite said. She said, this shows our economic plan is working. And the Bank of England will be looking at all the very granular elements of what makes up these inflation figures as they consider the trajectory of interest rate cuts. And most people this morning expecting that inflation slipping down to this level will make another interest rate reduction in March all the more likely. So the government will be able to say, look, interest rates are coming down. It's good news if you're on track of funds of mortgages, for example. It's going to help the supply of mortgages, which the housing sector desperately needs. And look, inflation is coming down. It's coming down at this dramatic rate. So aren't we doing well? It's worth noting still, I think, by the way, Nick, that a 3% inflation is still a full percentage point above the 2% Bank of England target. Mm-hmm. And it compares with 2% in Germany, 1.2% in Italy, 0.7% in France. So we are still a bit of a laggard on the in the race to get inflation under control. But most people are taking this as encouraging news. And as it comes to the Bank of England's interest rate decision, yes, they will be able to look at inflation and say, OK, that's cooling. We've done our job. We can start to cut interest rates. The other reason they will be cutting interest rates is because the economy is basically not growing and they need to stimulate some activity. And good news here for inflation and prices, hot on the heels of terrible news for the labour market yesterday. So overall, when we look at all the different lights on the economic dashboard, it's still a pretty mixed bag.
Okay, to City AM, why have you chosen to put on the front page a picture, a photograph of Jack Nicholson in that totemic scene from The Shining? I think it's Jack Torrance he plays as he splinters a door and he's trying to chase his wife through that eerie hotel. What's the thinking behind that, Christian May?
Well, it's all your fault. We were inspired by your brief conversation yesterday as to the most memorable lines from movie history.
Ah, yes.
And it's as terrified as I was that you were going to come to me and say, Christian, what's your favourite line from a movie? I was thinking of his Johnny. And the team at City AM have whipped that into the latest twist in the Warner Brothers Discovery on-off dance with Paramount. Obviously, Warner Brothers would like to be snapped up by Netflix. That is an agreed deal, albeit still plenty to work out. But they have opened the door again to Paramount, giving them a week to come up with a best and final offer to put up or shut up. They've rejected Paramount's bids up to now, which are very substantial, just under $110 billion for the whole of the company, compared to Netflix offering $82 billion for Warner Brothers' studio and streaming business. There is now a chance that Paramount will formally increase their offer price, maybe from $30 a share bid to $31 a share bid, it's been reported. This conversation is not happening in private. There's a huge amount of interest in the US, huge amount of congressional interest, in regulatory interest, even White House interest. And Paramount's not going down quietly. So they still very much want this acquisition, as does Netflix. Warner Brothers, for its part, says, listen, we like Netflix. We want to go with Netflix. But they are continuing to keep the music playing with Paramount for 7 further days before they will then make their, or try to make at least, their final decision on this mega deal.
Yesterday, Nigel Farage, Suella Braverman were talking about diversity, and they weren't the only ones. A banking giant was too.
It's Goldman Sachs, which one of the largest investment banks in the world, and often sets the tone, particularly in America, for sort of corporate culture. It's understood that they are planning to remove diversity criteria when making appointments to their board. They previously had some form of words that paid due attention to identity and diversity characteristics in those appointments, and they're stripping it out. And they've done this because the law is changing in America, because Donald Trump has taken an axe to a diversity, equality and inclusion legislation and regulation. And quite sometimes quietly and sometimes quite noisily over the course of the last year, American businesses in particular have been adapting their policies. Some of them have been quietly just shelving these arrangements. Others have been trying to make a bit of capital out of saying, yeah, damn right, we're not going to do that anymore. It's all part of the American cultural debate and corporate culture debate. But Goldman Sachs have said that when it comes to appointments to their board, they're not going to take into account people's gender identity or ethnic origins. They're just going to go on merit. merit, and some people will say, good, this is a great return to common sense, and other people will be slightly alarmed and say, hang on, does this row back some of the progress that we've made in these corporate titans? Because Goldman Sachs will help set the tone for many other employers and businesses. Goldman's already, about a year ago, said they're not going to take into account diversity when it comes to whether or not we're going to work with a client. That was something they previously did have in place, so they've scrapped that. And you know, Donald Trump has made a big deal about all of this, and as I say, some people will say this is perfectly sensible common sense reasserting itself, and other people will be slightly alarmed by it. But it'll be a business by business decision, I'm sure.
Just lastly and briefly, whatever happened to Build Baby Build?
Yeah, good question, Nick. House building in England has fallen to its lowest level in 12 years, which calls into question, to put it mildly, Labour's plan to build 1.5 million homes. I'll just very quickly give you these figures. There were 30,880 homes completed in England in the 3 months to September last year. That's according to the Office for National Statistics. That's down from the same period in 2024. So outside of the pandemic, this is the lowest rate of new home completions since 2014. And on those measures, on those numbers, there's simply no way that 1.5 million homes are going to be built by 2029. That's 300,000 new homes a year are needed. It simply isn't happening. Lots of reasons for that. One of them is the economy and people's confidence to actually go out and buy a home themselves. We know that the construction sector is basically in recession, and that's led by home building. And home builders will tell you that they just have too many regulations, too much red tape, and indeed too many high taxes to be competitive. And the government will tell you that they're working very hard to try and get reforms through and to shake this up. But the numbers are not pretty.
All right. Just lastly, have you been consigned to the back bedroom or something? It seems rather, you seem as if you're locked in an upstairs attic. Do you need me to send food and help?
You're not a million miles away. I'm in the boot room of a Peak District farmhouse.
Of course you are. I don't want to know anymore. I just want to leave it at that. Christian Mayes, editor-in-chief at City AM. Hopefully, we'll talk around the same time tomorrow if we can get links into him. It's worth saying, of course, the environment secretary, who said Build Baby Build was Steve Reed. He's the same person, of course, who decided that we wouldn't have local elections. Pressure building on Mr. Reed as to whether he should stay in place. Siptane in Croydon. We're going to do away with DEI, the Equality Act under reform. How supportive would you be of that? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Yes, long-time listeners, first-time callers.
Thank you for calling.
Bit nervous.
Oh,
bit
nervous,
but thank you. Thank you for that confidence. Yes, just the background on myself. I've lived in this country over 35 years.
Yes.
And I've never, ever, to date, I've come across where I've not been given anything which I deserve. Only thing which has given us help is our hard work. And still today, if somebody works hard, I think they can have everything what they want in this country.
And you came here from which country, sir, might I ask?
Pakistan.
But I just wonder if everyone who's come here from Pakistan could tell the same story. I don't know, Siptane. What do you think?
I think this media has given them so much to stand on, and they start shouting on that thing rather than if they come and work hard.
Do you think we need these equality laws in the workplace, Siptane?
I think as much as we've got, I think it's quite enough. I think if you want to bring any more, I think...
But they would go. That's the point, Siptane. So what we've got now would be, well, I'll be polite, watered down, many would say, would go completely. Would that give you cause for concern?
I think we've already gone too far now. I think if you want to go any further, I think you need to be careful. If anything, we need to water down, I suppose.
But you wouldn't be worried about perhaps giving up some of the advances that have been made? You'd be relaxed about that, Siptane?
Yes, I would be.
Okay.
Because I think if you leave your country to come over here, I think only caveat should be that you want to work hard and move on.
Yeah, no, I agree
If you want to come over here to build this system, then I don't think those people should be welcome here at all.
No, okay. And all your family, you think lastly, well, most of your family would say the same, we've made you, as we should, by the way?
I would say that, because we all wake up early in the morning, we go to bed early,
yeah,
and we work hard in the dream.
Right.
And I think if there was so much indiscrimination, Rishi Sunak, Preeti Patel, Saurabh Brahman, Kenny Benedict, and tens of them, they wouldn't be in the parliament, sitting in the parliament.
So well, that is an argument. It's fantastic to see people of colour getting into those key positions. Siptane, thank you. I don't know what you had to be nervous about. You were fantastic, buddy. And I look forward to talking to you about other matters. Best wishes to you and your family. 7:43. Let's prove that we are a global programme in every sense of the world and go to have elements in Iran. Now, here's the country's foreign minister, Abbas Araghchi, speaking yesterday afternoon following the latest round of talks with the US.
We are hopeful that negotiation will lead to a sustainable and negotiated solution. At the same time, as demonstrated during the aggression of 13 June 2025, Iran remains fully prepared to defend itself against any threat.
Well, let's turn to Mark Sievers, who's a US diplomat with more than three decades' experience serving across the Middle East and North Africa, former US ambassador to Oman, joining us from the UAE. Good to have you on, Mr. Ambassador. Two questions. What do you think will happen next? What do you think needs to happen next? Good morning to you.
Good morning. Great to be on LBC. Thank you.
Not at all.
So they've agreed, as I understand it, to another round. And there seems to be some agreement on perhaps a two-week period to prepare summaries of positions that will be exchanged. But fundamentally, I'm very, very skeptical that this process is going to reach a mutually agreed-upon solution, because I think the American position is that Iran must not be able to further enrich uranium, and the Iranians have not accepted that principle. And then there's also the question of their ballistic missile stockpiles and their brutal repression of their own people and the murder of many thousands. I don't know the numbers accurately, but in very large numbers, and their support for undermining the security and the sovereignty of their neighbors across the Gulf. So I'm skeptical.
Yeah, I don't think anyone knows the numbers accurately. The government itself admits to about 3,500. Outside agencies say it could be as many as 10 times that. Let me ask you this, having served in this field, Mr. Ambassador, for more than 30 years, for a deal to be done, you'll know better than I, both sides need to deal, want to deal. Do you sense both sides want to deal here?
It's very hard to say. It looks to me like the Iranians certainly have an interest in delay, and that seems to be their strategy. And they continue to make threatening statements about how they can sink aircraft carriers and all this kind of thing, which I think is false bravado, but that's pretty par for the course. On the part of the United States, it's very hard for me to say for sure what President Trump is up to. I certainly think that he wants to give a negotiating process a chance and see if there can be some kind of negotiated agreement with Iran. But it brings me back to my first point, which is that I'm skeptical that that's possible.
Grateful for your time today, sir. Thank you. Mark Sievers, your U.S. diplomat, more than three decades experience. Indeed, you're a U.S. ambassador to Oman up to 2019. You joined us from the UAE. Thank you for that. Coming up after news, we'll come back to our conversation about the reform from reform, which I think in the workplace has fallen a little bit flat. And if you want to talk about things that fell flat, here's a supposed gag. I think you say orcs, don't you? Young people, orcs. The Prime Minister with the Chancellor.
Chancellor, I've got something for you.
Oh, very good.
Come in. Yeah. Happy Pancake Day.
Thank you very much, Prime Minister. Are you going to have one as
I
well?
I like it. That's what I keep in here.
No, those of you who are hoping it was her P45, it wasn't. It was a pancake. Watch it on LBC. It is truly embarrassing. And notwithstanding the good news about inflation, which we all celebrate, house building the lowest since 2014, appalling figures for youth unemployment, one in six are out of work. Why are they making jokes about bloody pancakes and not doing their day job? Or is it just me? Probably is. 7:47, LBC News headlines, Dominic Ellis.
Police are assessing allegations that women and girls were trafficked through the UK on Jeffrey Epstein's private jet. Official figures show the rate of inflation fell sharply to 3% in the year to January. And one of the country's leading psychiatrists has warned that there's a silent mental health pandemic in England. LBC weather dry across Scotland and northern and eastern England with some sunshine, outbreaks of rain elsewhere, a high of 11 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Delays on the M4, it remains closed both ways between junctions 11 at Reading at the A33 and junction 10 at the A329M. It's for those emergency works, and there are lengthy queues both ways and on the surrounding routes. Very slow on the M25 clockwise from junction 30 at the A13 over the QE2 bridge to junction 2 at the A2, where a lorry has broken down. The South Circular Road remains closed both ways at Eltham, and the A13's very busy westbound up to the Gorsbrook interchange, and that's where a lorry has broken down. On the underground, there are minor delays now on the Piccadilly. That line, that's the entire line. And minor delays continue on the Bakerloo line.
This is LBC.
train to Chichester. Flasks filled, snacks packed, all ready for Maisie's first stargazing adventure.
Come on, Maisie! Follow everyone up to the top of that hill.
Oh, look, that one's the plough.
Shooting star! Wow!
Oh, made it. Last train back and feeling cosmic. And it seems we have an astronaut in the making. Download the Southern Railway app to book kids' tickets for £2 on off-peak journeys. Southern Railway, where every stop is a story.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. This is LBC.
Thinking of buying a new electric car? It can be tough to know where to start. Luckily, the experts have done the work for you. The new smart Hashtag 5 has just been announced as What Car's best family electric SUV of the year. And did we mention that the smart Hashtag 1 and Hashtag 3 are also previous What Car award winners? Work smart, not hard. Test drive Smart's award-winning EV range at smart.com.
The Hillary sale ends soon, so get window wise and grab these amazing offers while you still can. Like up to 50% off hundreds of made-to-measure blinds, curtains and shutters. Plus, grab £50 off your electric blind order and conveniently control your blinds for less. And don't forget, with Hillary's, measuring and fitting is always included. So get window wise and book your free in-home appointment today at hillarys.co.uk. But hurry, the Hillary sale ends on the 9th of March. Conditions apply.
Turn up your taste buds with Dolmio Intensify pasta sauces. From mild creamy garlic and black pepper, to bold smoky garlic and sun-dried tomato, and spicy smoked paprika and chili.
Woo-hoo!
Try Dolmio Intensify pasta sauces with serious flavor. Dolmio, yeah!
You want £1 million.
I'd love £1 million.
So you enter the birthday draw and you think of a way to spend £1 million.
I'd deposit regularly into a retirement fund that safely tracks the market.
It's a lucky day and you win the birthday draw.
I can't believe it.
And you buy a snake and a superbike instead.
Yeah, baby.
Is it your lucky day? For your chance to win £1 million, just search the birthday draw and enter now. From Global and ITV. 18 plus UK only. No purchase necessary.
I'm going to tell you exactly what you need to do. Dominate your finances.
Sunday morning, listening to questionable financial advice from the FinTok Bros on his social feed.
Drowning in green. Scale, 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 scale.
This is the moment Isaac chose to search Barclays Life Skills, get some better money intel, and save up for that new skateboard. We're helping young people become money confident. Search Barclays Life Skills. Barclays. Make money work for you.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
It's 8 minutes before eight is the time. We'll come back to those reforms, or the reform from reform, in a moment. But to other matters, as we heard about 20 minutes or so ago, sadly, when it comes to the building figures, we're at our lowest since 2014 as regards house building. But maybe there's better news as regards our railways, with a commitment to try and transform a part of the country. I speak of Welsh Rail, and here with more details is Labour MP and Secretary of State for Wales, Joe Stevens. Good to have you on, Secretary of State. What is it that you and your colleagues are hoping to bring about in Wales? Morning to you.
Good morning. Well, today we're announcing a generational commitment to transform Welsh Rail, to be delivered as quickly as possible with Welsh Government. A huge programme of works right across Wales, 7 new stations, electrification to main lines, upgrades to other lines right across Wales. And that's making up for the years of underinvestment under previous Conservative governments. And it builds on the nearly £500 million that we announced in the spending review last year. And it's part of our wider drive as a government to get Britain building again, creating new jobs and connecting people to new jobs that we are creating across the country. So the Prime Minister is in Wales today to make the announcement with the First Minister. And this is a massive win for Wales. It will be a huge win both for passengers and for businesses.
So just to clarify, we'd already heard of a £500 million spend, Secretary of State. What is the total spend now? What is effectively new money being sent in this direction, as it were?
So this pipeline of projects that is being announced today is over a period of time, which will, at current estimates, cost £14 billion. So this is a commitment to deliver that pipeline of projects and a commitment to new money.
Right. And can you give my listeners who are not in or around Wales, what is the current state? Is it sort of creaking, the current Welsh rail network?
Well, historically, there has been severe underinvestment in Wales in Welsh rail infrastructure. And so we don't have a system that is fit for passengers or for businesses. And it means that the jobs that we are creating all around the country in our investment zones in North and South Wales and in our free ports and through the huge investment in renewable energy that's happening in Wales, people can't get to the jobs that are being created. So this is to turn that around and make sure that we are delivering economic growth to every part of the country. It's a long-standing issue for people in Wales, and today's news is fantastic news for everybody.
And do we have an idea how many jobs it might create?
About 12,000 jobs, so 6,000 on construction, 1,000 jobs, permanent jobs in rail at the end of it, but also another 6,000 jobs as a result of the Parkway station in Cardiff, which the government has committed to, that will have a business park attached to it, and 6,000 new jobs being created there. About 800,000 passengers using that station when it is built.
How much of a Welsh welcome awaits the Prime Minister, Secretary of State, because the numbers as regards your local elections do not put your party in a good place?
Well, the polls are challenging, I'm not going to deny that, but certainly the news today that the Prime Minister is bringing and this, you know, £14 billion of investment into Welsh Rail will be warmly welcomed by, as I say, consumers, passengers, public and businesses right across Wales. This is a great news story. It's good news for Wales, and I'm sure that people will be very, very pleased to hear it.
But what do you see in a couple of months' time as regards the election for the Senate? What do you see as the outcome now? I look at the polling. You're in, sorry, not you personally, Labour Party's in third place. That's unheard of in Wales, Secretary of State.
It's challenging. But actually what's interesting about this election in May is it is a completely new voting system, so a pure de Hont system. People in Wales have historically had two votes for the Senedd election. This year they will have just one vote, and they will be electing 96 Senedd members instead of 60. So I think predicting the outcome based on what is reasonably volatile polling at the moment is quite difficult. Obviously, we will go into this election campaign, campaigning to make Eluned Morgan the First Minister of Wales again on May the 8th, and hoping that Wales, that Labour come top in Wales again.
Just lastly, you talk about building and building the railway, and that's fantastic, 12,000 jobs across Wales, that's great news. But if we come back to house building, you are possibly aware, if not I will make you aware, that the figures in for the 3 months prior to September of last year showed 30,880 new homes were delivered. That's the lowest figure since 2014. I know you didn't say it, but whatever happened to build, baby, build?
Well, certainly we have a commitment to deliver 1.5 million new homes in England, and we will do that. We're going to do it without compromising on any safety issues or planning reforms. We're going to make sure that housing developments will go ahead in the right places. And we are making big investments, for example, in flood projects, after the inheriting such a dreadful legacy from the last government. So creating the conditions to build and making sure that those 1.5 million homes are built.
But Secretary of State, you're not going to deliver 1.5 million homes if you deliver 30,000 in a quarter, are you? You're woefully, not you, but the party, the government, is woefully behind.
But that doesn't mean we can't catch up. So
are you honestly telling me you still think you'll hit the 1.5, Secretary of State?
We have a target of 1.5 million homes.
Well, I might have a target for losing six stone. Doesn't mean it's going to happen, does it? I might have a target.
I don't know. I've got more faith in you.
I might have a target of dancing for the Royal Ballet, but there are certain targets that are never going to be attained. And isn't that the reality here? You're never going to get to 1.5, Secretary of State.
Our aim is to get to 1.5 million new homes. They're desperately needed. That's what we said we wanted to deliver, and that's what we're aiming to deliver.
Lastly, it's great news. 12,000 jobs in Wales. That's fantastic for them, their families and everyone else. But I remind you, when Sir Keir entered Downing Street, he said he would put the country back in the service of working people. Although he struggled to define to me what an actual working person was. As regards young people, almost 950,000 are not in employment, education or training. One in six are out of work. What about getting them into work, Secretary of State?
Well, we're certainly, you know, we need to
get... Oh, this is another target, is it, Secretary of State?
We're tackling the root causes of unemployment. It's why we're investing £1.5 billion to deliver 50,000 apprenticeships and 350,000 new workplace opportunities for young people. And we know that so many people face barriers to work. So that might be physical health, mental health, or a disability. And that's why our £1 billion investment to support people into work from being on benefits over the next 5 years is so important. But we're also creating the conditions for business. So you will have seen last week, we've got the fastest growing economy in the G7.
Yes, 1%, just about 1%. I realise, but that's we're the lowest of a lot of low contenders, though, in fairness.
Yeah, but business confidence is up. Retail and consumer spending is up. The FTSE 100 is reaching an all-time high. And today we've seen interest rates come down from 3.4% to 3%.
That's the Bank of England.
And there's a record £340 billion of private investment secured. So corporation tax cap staying the same. We are creating the conditions for good investment, creation of jobs, and that is jobs for people of all ages, including youth.
Okay, grateful for your time. A generational change to Welsh Rail, 12,000 jobs, millions of pounds of investment, as outlined by Joe Stevens. Thank you, Secretary of State for Wales. Right, the music means we come and we will move on by coming back to our conversation about unemployment, or particularly youth unemployment. Why? Paul Novak from the TUC told me earlier in this hour,
none of us can be happy about the fact that nearly a million young people aren't in work, aren't in education or in training, but it's important that we put in place the right support to get them into work.
Big changes coming down the tracks for dual nationals wanting to get back into the UK. Karen Auckland is a British citizen living in Norway, and she will be affected.
At this rate, I've obviously got a mother, and my kids have got a grandmother and aunties and uncles and cousins in England, and they won't be able to travel. They won't be able to travel to England.
Plus, the horror at children's rotting teeth, a 14% rise in the youngsters needing extractions. We'll look at that as well. 8 o'clock news on LBC is next.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 8 o'clock, Essex Police says it's assessing allegations that Jeffrey Epstein used private flights into Stansted Airport to traffic women. 90 flights linked to Epstein reportedly arrived or departed from UK airports between the 1990s and 2018. Separately, LBC revealed yesterday that police are looking into claims that Andrew Mountbatten Windsor's protection team turned a blind eye during visits to see Epstein. Royal biographer Andrew Lowney has told Nick he hopes those with information will be allowed to help with investigations.
I'm certainly aware of letters being sent to policemen reminding them of their obligations of confidentiality. So I do hope the palace will cooperate. I mean, they know everything. All the police protection officers, the valets, the equerries, the secretaries have the full details. They should have provided this material before. I do hope they will now be allowed to provide it.
There is no suggestion of any criminality by Andrew during his visits to Epstein Island. The former prince has always denied any wrongdoing. Buckingham Palace says it is ready to support any police investigation. Official figures out this morning show the rate of inflation fell sharply to 3% in the year to January. That's compared to 3.4% the previous month. The fall was driven by cheaper fuel prices, lower airfares, and a small drop in food costs. Sir Keir Starmer is set to make his first appearance since the government abandoned plans to postpone dozens of May's council elections in England. The Prime Minister is due in Wales later to announce plans to build 7 new railway stations. Labour faces pressure from Plaid Cymru and Reform UK ahead of the Senate vote later this year. The Secretary of State for Wales, Joe Stevens, has admitted to Nick the polls are challenging.
Certainly the news today that the Prime Minister is bringing and this, you know, £14 billion of investment into Welsh Rail will be warmly welcomed by, as I say, consumers, passengers, public and businesses right across Wales. This is a great news story. It's good news for Wales. And I'm sure that people will be very, very pleased to hear it.
One of the country's leading psychiatrists has warned there's a silent mental health pandemic in England. Dr. Laddie Smith says people can't get the help needed because of under-resourced services. The government says it's invested an extra £688 million this year in mental health services.
And Warner Brothers has given the Hollywood studio Paramount a week to make its best and final takeover offer. The rival bidder Netflix will be allowed to match the deal under the terms of the merger agreement. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 reopened at 10,556. It closed up 82 yesterday. The pound buys $1.35 and €1.14. LBC weather dry across Scotland and northern and eastern England with some sunshine. Outbreaks of rain elsewhere. A high of 11 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Tesco Insurance are driving down the cost of motoring with 10% off car insurance. Take out a car insurance policy before the 15th of May 2026 and you'll get 10% off with club card prices. We offer a range of cover options so you can choose the one that's right for you. Save 10% when you buy or renew a car policy with Tesco Insurance. Search Tesco Car Insurance and get a quote direct today. Club card required. Excludes add-ons. T's and C's apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Morning to you, 4 minutes after eight, Wednesday, the 18th of February, as the news comes in that Labour isn't working for our young people. One in six 18 to 24-year-olds are out of work. Nearly a million, what are called NEETs, not in education, employment or in training. Does that signal a 15th U-turn? Dropping the youth wage pledge? We'll give you all the details on that and, of course, just as important, if not more importantly, take your views. Also in this hour...
My mum, Jane Presley, died after contracting a suspected gastric illness while on holiday in Cape Verde. I want to stop the same from happening to others. My name's Lucy Ambrose, and I'll be speaking to Nick later in the show.
And in the next hour, the couple after 9 o'clock, dual nationals barred from entry if they don't have a UK passport. It's a little bit complicated, but we will explain it in detail. And of course, it could affect you or someone you know or you love. Now, I know inflation is down, which is good news, but there are enormous challenges, as we've just been discussing, in house building, in other aspects of the economy. So why is Sir Keir Starmer doing a silly and awkward joke with his Chancellor?
Chancellor, I've got something for you.
Oh, very good.
Come in. Happy Pancake Day.
Thank you very much, Prime Minister. Are you going to have one as
I
well?
I like it. That's what I keep in here.
Oh, how we laugh. Chancellor, I've got something for you. P45. Now, that was something we could all celebrate, wouldn't it? Plus... Yes, it is just the drill as we reach a horrific figure. 14% rise in youngsters. Enough. Needing extractions. We'll have that in the next hour.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 60 60973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Who remembers back in 2024 as Sir Keir Starmer entered Downing Street with that promise to put the country back in the service of working people? You may recall I did ask him to define a working class or a working person. It didn't end up particularly well. Somebody wants a car on a holiday, as I recall. But we'll leave that there. That was, what, 18 months ago? Well, that's one thing that we can say Labour isn't working. One in six 18 to 24-year-olds are out of work. In some instances, firms openly saying they're just too expensive to hire. There's also the dubious impact of Rachel Reeves' budget as regards national insurance. And here's another upsetting figure. Youth unemployment, 16.1%, greater than the European Union average. We're doing worse than our friends across the channel. And it goes worse. There's virtually a million 16 to 24-year-olds who are NEETs, not in education, employment or training. Now, apparently we have an employment czar, Alan Milburn, the former health secretary. He's very concerned about this. He says that state and businesses need to do more. Well, they probably do, but I remember one of the great inspirations when I was a lad to get out to work was Mum and Dad. And I appreciate there are many of you listening now who possibly you didn't have a dad who was present, you didn't have the greatest upbringing. But while governments and probably employers can do more, what's the role of the family here, particularly as, and I know from personal experience, of youngsters in that group, 16 through 24, who have applied for hundreds, I repeat, hundreds of jobs. And in some instances, they don't even get a reply. It's being described almost as like an episode of The Hunger Games now for a young person to try and get a job, which if you haven't seen the film, obviously you won't understand what I mean. If you have seen the film, unfortunately, it speaks of a brutal reality. So what of the TUC, the Trade Union Congress? Well, in the previous hour of the show, I was speaking with Paul Novak, who's the General Secretary. Now, he was on to talk about Reform UK's pledge to scrap the equality legislation. But I asked him, as the head of the umbrella organisation, bringing together nearly 50 trade unions and millions of workers, what he made of this issue of youth unemployment.
I mean, none of us can be happy about the fact that nearly a million young people aren't in work, aren't in education or in training, but it's important that we put in place the right support to get them into work. I mean, just talk about apprenticeships there. And Suella Braverman talked about the trades. She didn't set out anything practical to help people get out into the trades. But, you know, if you think about apprenticeships, barely one in two young people complete those apprenticeships because we've had a wild west of apprenticeship standards, employers not living up to their obligations. I think that we need to do everything, including the government's youth jobs guarantee, to support those young people into work and crucially into good quality work as well, Nick, because what we quite often have is young people cycling in and out of 0 hours contracts, low-paid jobs, and that's not good for them and it's not good for the economy.
And within the last quarter of an hour, I was speaking with a senior government minister on the round today, Wales Secretary Joe Stevens, talking about billions of pounds going into Welsh Rail and thousands of jobs there. But what is her government doing to fix this problem of youth unemployment?
Well, we're certainly, you know, we need to get...
Oh, this is another target, is it, Secretary of State?
We're tackling the root causes of unemployment. It's why we're investing £1.5 billion to deliver 50,000 apprenticeships and 350,000 new workplace opportunities for young people. And we know that so many people face barriers to work. So that might be physical health, mental health or a disability. And that's why our £1 billion investment to support people into work from being on benefits over the next 5 years is so important. But we're also creating the conditions for business. So you will have seen last week, we've got the fastest growing economy in the G7.
Yes, just about 1%. I realise, but that's, we're the lowest of a lot of low contenders, though, in fairness.
Yeah, but business confidence is up. Retail and consumer spending is up. The FTSE 100 is reaching an all-time high. And today we've seen interest rates come down from 3.4% to 3%.
That's the Bank of England.
And there's a record £340 billion of private investment secured. So corporation tax cap staying the same. We are creating the conditions for good investment, creation of jobs, and that is jobs for people of all ages, including youth.
Writing in today's Daily Mail, the award-winning city editor and chief economic commentator, Alex Brummer, talks about this being the Labour legacy, fewer jobs and hardship for the young. Alex Brummer joins me now. Well, Alex, it's been a while since you and I were writing our respective first letters to newspapers trying to get a job on a local paper, whatever it might have been. What's gone wrong over the years? Morning, Alex.
Well, I think two things I think we could immediately say. One is that Labour, instead of bringing up the labour market, has made it much more difficult for people to enter the labour market. And that's through national insurance, because the entry-level national insurance rate is has gone up very strongly, so people don't want to take people on. And secondly, there's been this whole business about the minimum wage. That is likely to go up, and they're now talking about U-turning on that. I suppose a third factor is they've got the Employment Rights Act, which actually comes into effect, I think, today. And that is also putting a whole lot of restrictions on employers about how they can treat the workforce. But I think for young people in particular, the real barrier at the moment is the way that people recruit. And the way that people recruit now is online, and I think that allows, it requires you to make thousands of applications before you even get your foot in the door. And that's very upsetting, I think, for young people, and very degrading for young people.
In your piece in the Mail today, you talk about a doom loop. Just break that down a little for the listeners, Alex.
Yeah, well, the doom loop is this, that the more people who are unemployed, the bigger the welfare bill for the country. That's unemployment benefits and other benefits. And also, they're not paying taxes. So what actually happens is that the public finances get worse. You put more of a burden on the public finances. That's more borrowing. And that means you have to have more taxes. And more taxes, of course, are anti-growth. And that affects the whole economy and the whole prospects of growth. And I listened to your previous minister just a moment ago talking, and she referred to Britain's growth being the highest in the G7. That is absolute rubbish. The United States actually has faster growth than we do, and our growth is virtually negligible.
Lastly, you mentioned it. Do you detect the whiff of a 14th or 15th U-turn?
I think that... The words we've heard from the government this morning and yesterday suggest to me that the minimum wage will be the rise in the minimum wage will be postponed. I'd love it if the minimum wage went up. We all want to see people earning more, and it's ghastly that they don't earn enough. But to get in the workforce, they need a starter job. And all this business about, from the trades unions, about people not being on zero-hours contracts. Zero-hours contracts can get people into the workforce. It gets them through the door. People can see what their talents are, and they can offer them a full-time job.
Alex Brummer is City Editor and Chief Economic Commentator at the Daily Mail. A piece in today's paper, Alex, thank you, 13 after 8. Well, what's it like actually being at the front of this, being at the coalfaces of being an employer? Mike Cherry is a small business owner, director of W.H. Mason & Sons, a timber and manufacturing business. Where are you based, Mr. Cherry? Morning.
We're based in Burton-on-Trent because part of our business is supplying the hospitality sector. The other part does laser-engraved gifts for business-to-business under our Just Wood name. So we have two sides. One side, obviously, is a little bit awkward at the moment because of the hospitality sector. But I really do agree with Alex when he says that 0 hours can actually help people into jobs. Paul Novak, I'm sorry, is wrong on that one, unless he knows something that I don't. But as a small business, we have a massive increase in costs over the last 2 or 3 years. And this has been exacerbated by the reduction in the threshold for national insurance. It's been exacerbated by the 6.7% increase in the national minimum wage last year. That's going up a further 4% this April. It's gone up a lot higher for younger people. And I think the problem is that it depends what you're actually offering young people. If they're coming to us and going on our machines, then they have a long learning curve and you cannot pay them the same adult rate as a normal employee. If, on the other hand, they're doing IT stuff, then we can train them up fairly quickly and we will pay them the adult rate or above. But I think one of the big problems we've got is that we don't recognise apprenticeships for what they are. Mm-hmm. You always used to have set levels, which was strongly supported and agreed by the unions when I was younger, and we had some really good apprenticeships, but they started on a lower percentage rate of the adult rate. And then, of course, as Alex has mentioned, you've got the Employment Rights Act. So there's been a compounding of massive increases in costs for small businesses. We were looking to take on a young person last April. That had to stop.
Really?
We simply couldn't afford it. We have got a young person coming for work experience in June. We were approached on that and very happy to take them on, because if someone walks through the door and we can see that they are interested, we will try to give them a chance.
Let me ask you this. I don't know whether you have children, stepchildren, grandchildren. Why is it so difficult for this age range to get jobs, Mike?
I think, quite frankly, they don't understand what is around them. And this comes back to education. It comes back to teachers not knowing the businesses that are around. Everybody used to know who was there, what was there. And, of course, for us as a manufacturer, it becomes increasingly difficult because there are tick box exercises. If we want to take on an actual apprentice, we can't, because we don't match the tick boxes that are required under an apprenticeship for woodworking. And that's a problem for us. So we have to make ourselves visible. We do that online in what we offer, and we hope that somebody will come to us. But to expect the government to increase support when they've increased the cost so dramatically, I just can't understand why they haven't seen it before now, that it's a no-brainer that more and more young people are going to be out of work because of their cost increases.
Mike Cherry, I will leave it there. Thank you. Your owner and director of W.H. Mason & Son, a timber manufacturing business based in Burton-upon-Trent. Labour isn't working in this area, and we'll take your views on why. Also after the news.
There's going to be a huge crackdown on London's unruly pedicabs after I got kicked off one by a rider who ran a red light. I'm LBC's Joseph Draper with the details.
8:17, LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
Police are assessing allegations that women and girls were trafficked through the UK on Jeffrey Epstein's private jet.
Official figures show the rate of inflation fell sharply to 3% in the year to January. And one of the country's leading psychiatrists has warned that there's a silent mental health pandemic in England. LBC weather dry across Scotland and northern and eastern England with some sunshine, outbreaks of rain elsewhere, a high of 11 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. The M4 is closed both ways between junctions 11 at Reading and 10 at the A329M. It's because of the ongoing investigation and the emergency work, so there are queues on the approach and on all the surrounding routes. Also on the M4, there are westbound queues to junction 89 at Maidenhead, and that's because of an accident. On the M25, there are lengthy delays clockwise from junction 30 at the A13 over the QE2 bridge into Kent to junction 2 at the A2, where a lorry has broken down. Also slow on the M1 northbound up to junction 8 at Hemel Hempstead. A car is on fire, so one lane is closed for recovery. And on the underground, there are minor delays on the Bakerloo and Piccadilly lines.
This is LBC.
Get that Euro Millions feeling with this Friday's £109 million super jackpot. So super, you've got to dance. So let's dance like never before. On a beach? On your own private island? Euro Millions from the National Lottery. Play on app. Estimated jackpot. Subject to currency fluctuation. Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. LBC.
Nothing beats that electric feeling of live sport. As the proud automotive partner of Team GB, Vauxhall is supporting Britain's extraordinary athletes through every nail-biting, glue-to-the-box moment. Vauxhall is working towards a better future for our nation with its electric vehicle range, including the compact Vauxhall Combo Electric Van, made in Britain for Britain. Head to lbc.co.uk and tell us about your own extraordinary work feats to win £1,000.
Tesco Insurance are driving down the cost of motoring with 10% off car insurance. Take out a car insurance policy before the 15th of May 2026 and you'll get 10% off with club card prices. We offer a range of cover options so you can choose the one that's right for you. Save 10% when you buy or renew a car policy with Tesco Insurance. Search Tesco Car Insurance and get a quote direct today. Club card required. Excludes add-ons. T's and C's apply.
Done. Move that. And, oh, new ways to invest.
Okay.
Foolproof guaranteed returns. Invest today.
All right, I think I will.
Way before you seal the deal, check if it's real and if a company's authorised by the FCA.
Oh, thanks.
Search FCA Firm Checker.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
The problems of young people getting into employment, 820. Mark, you'll be the first caller. Let's just do a couple of the emails and texts here. Cheryl says, as an ex-recruiter, I can honestly say online recruitment and screening has been the worst of technology. It allows recruiters to be lazy and employers missing out on great people. Melanie says, my son applied for over 200 jobs. He has an architecture degree from a good university. He's also doing carpentry and has only just secured a part-time job at the local B&Q. And lastly, Mark in Lee Green. I know how difficult it is for the young. After our daughter passed, we had parental guidance for our 14-year-old. With his problems, he ended up at a special needs school. Basically, he never got qualifications. He's on UC Universal Credit at present. All they keep saying is, there is nothing out there, so why doesn't he join the army? Who wants to fight for this country now, the way the veterans are treated? Mark, I don't disagree with that. Now, from the Mark to Mark in Plymouth. Mark, you're an employer, is that right, sir? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. I am indeed.
What sort of line are you in, sir?
So, we're an electrical contracting company down in Plymouth.
How's business?
Steady. I can say steady. You know, yeah, everybody's busy, so that's the main thing. But it's definitely going slower than it has been in previous years.
What do you put that down to? We're not building enough houses?
That has a big knock-on effect. Mm. You know, we're never going to meet the government's targets on what they're suggesting we need to build. You can just see that by the planning application.
Why are we going to get there, Mark?
Well, one of the reasons, I think, is, you know, we can't bring youngsters into the trade like we used to on apprenticeships. I've been fortunate enough to do the same trade my entire life. If I go back to when I started, you know, we have set rates by industry that set the rates for. So an apprentice, a second-year apprentice, back when I sort of started back in the late 80s, early 90s, was about 15% of the rate of an electrician. And then we understood that. We were training. We were an
overhead. How old would you have been there? 16, roughly?
I was 16. As soon as I left school. Today, a second-year apprentice is on 50. This is just his wages. It's not including NI, pension, SSP payments, the additional business rates.
Because
we have to pay that now, whereas before the government would fund it. So a second-year apprentice is now on 55% of what an electrician would earn.
That's unsustainable for the businesses, isn't it?
And that's the problem. You know, you can't bill an apprentice out and as a second-year apprentice. He's learning. Mm. You accept that. But the difference between what an electrician was earning and what an apprentice was earning back then was more proportionate for the work that they could do.
But what about the supply chain, Mark? Are there loads of kids who want to be electricians?
No. We've had so many that have started and never finished. A lot of that is led by the NVQ framework that is now the sort of lead for all apprenticeships, which isn't real world. They will say it's evidence-based and everything else, but they just try and get the training providers obviously only get payment on completion, so they try and push them through the NVQ route.
So yours is a classic success story. You leave school at 16, you're an apprentice, you learn your trade, which is a very important trade. We're always going to need sparkers, we're always going to need an electrician. You now run your own business. Do you think you could achieve now what you achieved however many years ago when you started as a kid?
No.
Why?
Because I don't think the opportunity there, because the costs are so high.
Isn't that terrible? I'm delighted for you. Fantastic. But your sons or daughters probably couldn't do the same. Isn't that depressing?
I agree. Yeah, and I think it's very difficult for anybody that's starting out now.
What needs to change?
The government needs to understand the benefits of apprentices and understand there has to be a pay difference. I understand there needs to be a minimum wage for those people that are not in training. I accept that. And I accept it needs to be maybe where it is now. But you can't roll that out across all trainees because it prevents people becoming trainees.
Let me just give the figures. Workers aged over 21 must be paid a minimum of £12.21 an hour. Those between 18 and 20 receive £10 an hour. Since Labour came to power, there's been a 6.7% increase in the minimum wage for workers. Now, a lot of my listeners would say, why can't that boss there, you, Mark, why can't he give them an extra £2 an hour, is what they would be saying. As an employer, tell them why.
Because they're an overhead, and if I'm not a successful business, we have to make profit. That's the whole point of having a business.
Absolutely.
And we have to make sure there's work for those people that we employ 40 hours a week or 37 and a half hours a week, 52 weeks of the year, excluding their holidays. If we don't keep our costs correct and the balance correct, then there won't be any work and then there'll be no employment.
How many people do you employ?
15 at the minute.
Yeah. Is it the toughest times you've known?
Yes, right now it is, yes.
Okay. Listen, well done. Do you want to mention your company? You don't have to. It's whether you're...
No, we're quite happy. Just, you know, it was just feedback. It's real-world figures. You know, that's what it is. It was 15% when they were training back in the late 80s, early 90s. Now it's 55%.
What is the company you run? Do you want to tell me the name of your company?
Yeah, it's a company called KK Controls.
KK Controls, down in Plymouth, I assume? Is that where you're...
That's right, we are, sir. Yeah.
KK, all right, King. Good luck. Mark, well done for all the work that you're providing for folk. Izzy in Hinckley. Izzy, what are you going to tell me? Good morning.
Hiya.
Morning.
Morning. I graduated in university in 2021.
Right.
For graphic design. As soon as I graduated, obviously I tried to get a job in graphic design, and I was told all over the place that I did not have enough experience. I then was told to
volunteer
for free.
Well, that's a vicious circle. If you can't get a job, you can't get experience. Yeah, go on, Izzy.
That's exactly what I said.
Yeah.
I then tried to do free work to try and gain experience. And again, I was told, no, you haven't got enough experience. So now I'm doing free work, doing work, posting on my Instagram, and people can just screenshot that and just take it.
So you left in 2021. Have you had any lengthy periods of employment in the last five years?
Not in the area that I graduated in, no.
Do you now regret studying graphic design? Do you wish you'd studied something else? How do you look back at the years you studied now?
I see it as a massive waste of 3 years. I graduated in graphic design for no point.
Oh, dear. Are you going to stick with it, trying to get a job, or are you almost on the point of saying, up with this, I will not put?
Well, at the moment, I'm just drawing for fun. So I'm just drawing on my breaks as a security guard and just posting it on the page to try and get some sort of acknowledgement that I have got some sort of talent there.
When you meet with your friends all roughly the same age, how many of them have got similar stories?
All of them. None of them have got any job in the area that they graduated in. One of them works in Tesco still.
I'm not knocking you for a moment. You studied 3 years to be a graphic designer, and I'm not knocking this, and you work in security. Do you feel a bit let down by the system?
100%, yeah.
I'm sorry, Izzy. I do hope things change. Credit to you, kid, for doing a job. Well done, Izzy. Good luck with it. 8:28. Matthew in Oban. What are you going to tell me, Matthew? Hello.
Hi, Nick. So I recently graduated from with a master's in journalism.
Oh.
And I have was on the job hunt for a while, and I couldn't. I'm now having to travel 2.5 hours from my hometown of Glasgow to work on a minimum wage local paper just to get the relevant experience to get a job.
So you're working on a local paper, did you say?
Yes.
Well, that's sensational. Great.
But, I mean, the job itself is brilliant, and I'm very much enjoying it. It's just that it's
what are you,
quite
a reporter?
Disheartening. Yeah, it's quite disheartening to, you know, leave university after 5 years to go on to a minimum wage job.
And I'm very grateful for studying journalism. How did you get it to 5 years? I could do it in 5 months.
It was 4 years doing politics and 1 year doing journalism.
Okay.
And I'm very grateful for the job that I have, but it's just challenging to, you know, come out of such a long period of study to have such a low paid wage.
Do you want to do print journalism, broadcast journalism, multimedia? What is it you ultimately want to do?
I think one day, you know, probably broadcast
journalism.
You know, you've just got to get the relevant experience. But out of the 19 people that are on our university course, I mean, you can count on one hand how many have got a job, which is
would
just
you
quite
have
a
got
frightening
this
state of affairs.
Lastly, Matthew, how do you think you would have got the work you've got on the local had you not gone to university, or was it necessary to produce your 5-year degree to get the thing to get the gig in the first place?
Well, obviously now you need legal qualifications, certifications to be a journalist.
Really?
Whether there is an availability of, you know, an apprenticeship where you get that on the job, I don't know. I haven't seen many jobs offered that way.
Mm. What attracted you to journalism?
I guess I've always found people interesting and the stories they have to tell.
Yeah. Stay in touch. Good luck, fella. You are ahead of the pack. I appreciate you doing minimum work. I get it. And it's not what you thought. And you did 5 years studying journalism. I reckon I could do it in a 5-week intensive course, by the way. Who, what, where, when, why, how. That's all you need to know. Who, what, where, when, why, how. You can write any story in the world. Matthew, good luck, fella. But you are ahead of the pack. You've got some work. Coming up in the next hour. Some rotten story. Concerning rotting teeth, a 14% rise. 56,000 children having hospital extractions. What lies behind that? 8:30. Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrara, here on LBC News. Dominic Ellis.
Essex Police says it's assessing allegations that Jeffrey Epstein used private flights into Stansted Airport to traffic women. 90 flights linked to Epstein reportedly arrived or departed from UK airports between the 1990s and 2018. Official figures show the rate of inflation fell sharply to 3% in the year to January. That's compared to 3.4% the previous month. The fall was driven in part by cheaper fuel prices. And it's reported the government is considering slowing down plans to pay adults of all ages the same minimum wage. Labour promised in its manifesto to remove age bans and to increase the wages of 18 to 20-year-olds so they're paid the same as those over the age of 21. LBC weather dry across Scotland and northern and eastern England with some sunshine. Outbreaks of rain elsewhere, a high of 11 degrees.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
Nigel Farage getting his top team together. I've never personally been convinced that Reform would win it outright, but the polling suggests that they are going to be, by some distance, the largest party, were there to be an election tomorrow, and therefore could probably do something with the Conservatives in order to get them over the line. And the Tories would do it, by the way. They are addicted to being in some form of power.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Did you know HGVs have four zones of limited vision around them? If you're in one of these areas, you may not be seen by the driver. These four limited vision zones are in front, behind, and at both sides of the HGV. So when you're driving around a HGV, don't linger around them, because they may not notice you're there. Know the HGV zones. National Highways.
It's another day at Screwfix, and Sir Mo Farah is still getting to grips with things.
So, Mo, with Sprint Delivery, we get the order to them in as little as 20 minutes. Okay. Mo?
Mo?
Done. He was on the 18th floor.
Nice work. But, you know we use delivery riders, right?
Oh, now you tell me.
Sprint it in as little as 20 minutes. Screwfix. No stopping you. Conditions and geographical restrictions apply.
This time last year, Hassan was working in sales and spent his evenings gaming. Now, he's working as a prison officer.
You know what's going to happen? Stop working. Let's just go in there.
He's tackled cell fires, got through to some of the most challenging prisoners, and helped support their rehabilitation. He's done things he once thought he was never capable of. But he still loves his gaming. An extraordinary job done by someone like you. Search prison jobs now.
Your commute feels like it's taking forever. You're feeling crowded and there's that nagging feeling that you just want to vape. Don't let nicotine cravings ruin your day. Nicorette's lozenges help fight vaping cravings and can be used anytime, anywhere. Make 2026 the year you quit and enjoy freedom from smoking and vaping with help from Nicorette. Quitting made real. Nicorette Cool's Lozenge contains nicotine. Stop smoking or stop nicotine vaping aid. Requires willpower. Always read the label.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
This is what you're saying, and we really have tapped into something here. Sandra in Hampstead, my granddaughter received a degree as a Bachelor of Science in Criminology. She's now working in Tesco's. After years of hard work, it was a total waste of time for her. Sandy asks, how much longer have we got to listen to deluded Labour ministers talking about how well we're doing, how the economy is growing, how business is growing? Do they not listen to any of the people who phone in to say just how tough it is, and they cannot move on because of the wrecking ball the Chancellor used in her budgets? Let's talk about the recruitment side of this. Nick is in Kinross. Nick, what are you going to tell me? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for calling.
I just wanted to say that most recruiters, unfortunately, seem to focus on totally the wrong thing. And
what
AI
should they be focusing on?
Well, they're focusing on the CV. And the CV focuses on hard skills, focuses on what people have done in the past, focuses on training and so on.
Mm-hmm.
But what makes somebody really successful in role is less to do with that and much more to do with transferable soft skills.
Mm-hmm.
You know, things that are inside us, and those are never on the CV. So what's now happening is that applicants are using AI to create their CVs, and then recruiters are using AI to sit CVs. So that makes a lot of sense. And you end up with people being excluded from the process simply because they don't have exactly the hard skills that people are looking for, whereas the ones who are sort of discarded potentially have far better soft skills and would be much, much better in the role.
Very briefly, unbelievably, I was an employer once in that I had senior roles at various news organisations and I used to employ reporters. Nick, so often you'll have someone with what looks to be an impeccable CV. You get him, her in front of you, and it's just not there. You can just tell it's not what you're looking for. But on paper, they look brilliant.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's part of the problem, why so many young people are not getting a chance.
What, as someone who works in this field, what would your advice be to someone listening now, he, she is 19, 20, 21, sending out hundreds of applications and effectively getting nowhere? What would your advice be?
it's not an easy thing for them at all. I think just keep trying. But I'm trying to change the recruitment world from the inside. I'm trying to get them to stop focusing on the CV and start looking at soft skills.
But it's probably cheaper, isn't it, to effectively put it through an AI tool. It's just cheaper to do that, isn't it?
Absolutely, and it's lazy, and it doesn't produce better results either.
Nick, enjoyed our conversation. Thank you, Scott. You'll be the next caller on that. But let's go to other matters. Now, talking about jobs, if you were hoping that when the Prime Minister called Chancellor Rachel Reeves into his office and said, I've got something for you, it was a P45, well, you, like me, are disappointed, because this is what happened that they tried to get down with the kids.
Chancellor, I've got something for you.
Oh, very good.
Come in.
Yeah. You all right?
Very good.
Is this your box?
happy Pancake Day.
Thank you very much, Prime Minister. Are you going to have one as well?
I really like it. That's what I keep in here.
Very good.
Are you all right? There's your box. Who thought this... This is on their TikTok account, by the way. You can see it on the LBC app or lbc.co.uk. Whoever thought that was a good idea? It is orcs, as you young people say. But they're not the only politicians who've tried to get down with the kids. Here's a few recent examples, starting with leader of the Liberal Democrats, Sir Ed Davey.
Hi, guys, it's Ed Davey, leader of the Riz Dems. I thought I'd join the TikTok hype to slay just in time for Christmas. It's giving main character energy.
Nothing beats it.
This is my idea of a holiday. I'm here at the site of the Rampion 2 wind farm. 1 million homes powered. 4,000 jobs during construction.
I love AI. Do you use AI?
Absolutely.
Do you use ChatGPT? Do you love ChatGPT? I love ChatGPT. I love it.
Six seven.
Everybody, 6-7. Are you doing page 6-7?
We're not over that yet. We're not over that.
Merry Christmas, everybody.
So, say
6-7.
Well, the children are roaring with laughter. You heard Sir Ed Davey, who didn't fall off a surfboard on that occasion, Ed Miliband, Boris Johnson, Sir Keir Starmer and Nigel Farage, to Sophia Smith-Gaylor, who is a journalist and TikTok content creator, founder of the social media consultancy Virelect, joining me now. When they go wrong, they go really wrong. I'm sure you'll agree with me on that, Sophia. So what makes a good TikTok moment? Good morning.
Well, the first thing I would like to do is complain that Sir Keir Starmer offered up American-style pancakes that looked pretty cold coming out of that red box. But in terms of what makes a good moment, it's not even quite like that. That's not how I like to think of a good TikTok strategy. That's
Come on, then. Give me the strategy for TikTok.
Seriously.
Put it on the block for TikTok.
Those who appear to do it best and have the most success with this format know the importance of light and dark. They know the importance of coming out with videos when they need to address serious issues, policy changes, and comment and analyze on news stories relevant to their politics as and when it happens. It's not the case that there isn't room for humor. For example, Nigel Farage is a politician who has done this incredibly well on his platform. He knows when to add in moments of lightness, and then in the next video, it may be something far more serious. There's been a lot of content over the years from Nigel Farage where you will see him engaging with people who are clearly supporters of his politics, and he'll be having a laugh, he'll be having a bit of a joke, and it's really clear as a viewer, at least in that very moment, that you think, oh, this is someone that possibly does have a lot of support. This is someone who knows how to be a little bit relatable, a little bit human. And quite importantly, a lot of these clips seem quite ad hoc, off the cuff. Obviously, this scenario that we're talking about today, this TikTok where Sir Keir Starmer has, with his team, clearly planned with very, very high production value, filming him offering some pancakes to the Chancellor, it looks too staged. And that is, I think, one of the issues with politicians trying to make funny TikTok and wider vertical video content. If it looks too staged, too deliberate, it's cringe.
Talk to me about the rise of TikTok, and is it unstoppable?
It's not only unstoppable. All of the other social media platforms that are seeing turbo-boosted engagement and reach amongst audiences around the world, I'm talking about Instagram, I'm talking about YouTube, they have all aped TikTok's short form vertical video, not only the format, but the recommendation algorithm. So even if we just look at, if we isolate TikTok and we look at the growth it's had as a news source from 2020 amongst adults, it was at 1%. It had barely penetrated UK sort of news media at that point. At this point, I know in 2024, it was about 11% of UK adults. If you look at teenagers, it's about a third of them. So that is an incredibly fast growth as a news source for a new app on the scene. What's also happened is Instagram and YouTube, which we also know are really growing very quickly as news sources. It's primarily the short form vertical offering, the product that they have, that people are engaging with. So this is becoming one of the most serious and important ways to reach audiences en masse and engaged audiences, to the point that a politician is probably going to get a lot more eyeballs on a viewpoint that they have if they make a vertical video about it compared to if they went on traditional television or radio.
Sophia, I will leave it there. Thank you, Sophia Smith-Gaylor, journalist, TikTok content creator, founder of social media consultancy Viralect. This is what you're saying on social media about this. Michael, that pancake clip was the most cringeworthy thing I've seen in a long time. It was like a scene out of a Carry On film. Well, I don't know, actually. I thought some Carry On films. I mean, very much of their time, I hasten to add. Very much of their time. But they were funny. That just wasn't funny at all. Where's your name? Tony and Barnum. I just watched the crankiest pancake joke. I spoke to you after Rachel Reeves' first budget that increasing employers' NI contributions, as well as increasing the minimum wage, would mean businesses closing down, laying off workers, or not employing would affect the young the most. A lot of people said that, Tony. You were one of them. Check out the video, should you so desire, if you are so minded, on the LBC app or lbc.co.uk. Back to youth unemployment, because it's not youth employment. Let's talk to Scott. You're a boss. You're an employer, are you? Is that right, Scott, in Romford? Good morning.
That's right, Nick, yeah. We're
what
on
line are you in, sir?
In shipping and freight forwarding.
How's that going?
Tough. Mm. Same as everyone else at the moment. Main things, like everyone keeps saying, is a rising NI, corporation tax, and staff wages. Majority of our workforce has predominantly been apprentices, and the minimum wage has gone up 40%+ in over 3 years.
Now, you see, I've got people saying, well, if these bosses can't... I gave the example of what you have to pay. It's 12.21 if you're over 21 the age, 12.21 pence if you're over 21, £10 if you're... They're saying if they can't afford an extra £2 now, their businesses aren't running particularly well. That's what I'm seeing on social media. Scott, what would you tell those folks?
What I'd say is in our industry, the difference between minimum wage and what someone with 10 or 15 years experience can earn is not that far away. Maybe you can earn $30,000 a year,
yep.
Minimum wage $25,000. So for us, it's a two-way street. We get cheap labour, if you like, but it takes us nearly a year for them to learn the trade and become of any real use. So for us, it's a case of if we've got to pay, go for a year of pain, teaching them, you know, even the basics of turning up on time for a start, why would we not just employ someone with 10 years' experience?
Well, you would, wouldn't you? Let's be honest with each other. You would, wouldn't you?
Yeah. I mean, the difference, the other thing I'd like to point out as well is how the apprenticeships are run. The college we use, our first apprentice, who's now actually in charge of the team, he started, and every month we would have a visit from the college. They would talk to us, you know, how's he getting on? Is there any problems? Yeah, his phone manner's not great. This needs to improve. There'd be some communication. They'd relay it back to Josh, and you'd see some real growth. But after COVID, the college is less than 4 miles from our office. They've not visited us once with the other three apprentices.
That's terrible.
That is on screen. So, again, these kids, through COVID, have seen a lot of parents working at home. They see their tutors can't even be bothered to come and see them. And they have no idea what work ethic is or, you know, what the workplace expect. And we're having to teach them the fundamentals, the basics of being on time, you know. And the other thing is how to incentivise them. I mean, when I started on £5,000. You know, I was with the same company 11 years, grew to the point where I started my own company. These kids have got, if you're giving them all the money straight away, I mean, they pull up in cars with private number plates and expensive coats, more than what they're earning in a month. And you say to them, if you do this, and you reach this target, we will pay you more. They don't seem incentivised by money.
Lastly, when you hear the government or the opposition or the employment czar talk about restructuring and getting apprenticeships to work. In reality, you're at the coalface. How do you react, Scott?
Really, I think the companies need to see a benefit, and they, like I say, they're getting something from it. They're learning a trade. Mm. You can't, like that electrician guy saying 55% of
yep,
you know,
up of, from 15. How, yep.
My son's training to be an electrician. It's going to take him 4+ years. How can it be right that someone with no experience that's going to take 4 years to be any good to that company can earn 55% of what a qualified person can?
There's one employer talking to another employer. Such an interesting conversation from you two blokes. Scott, good luck with the business you run. Thank you. 8:46, coming up after the news.
My mum, Jane Presley, died after contracting a suspected gastric illness while on holiday in Cape Verde. I want to stop the same from happening to others. My name's Lucy Ambrose, and I'll be speaking to Nick later in the show.
And Lucy joins us after the news headlines read by Dominic Ellis.
Essex Police says it's assessing allegations that Jeffrey Epstein used private flights into Stansted Airport to traffic women. Official figures show the rate of inflation fell sharply to 3% in the year to January, and it's reported the government is considering slowing down plans to pay adults of all ages the same minimum wage. LBC weather dry across Scotland and northern and eastern England with some sunshine, outbreaks of rain elsewhere, a high of 11 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. The M4 remains closed in both directions between junctions 11 at the A33 and junction 10 at the A329M. Those emergency works are still taking place. Huge delays on the approach and on the surrounding routes. And then also on the M4, westbound at junction 89 at Maidenhead. One lane's had to be closed because of an accident. In Esher, the Portsmouth Road is closed both ways because of an accident, and that's causing queues. In Eltham, Wellhall Road, which is part of the South Circular Road, is closed in both directions, also after an accident. There's just been an accident on the A2 eastbound at the M25 junction, and as a result, there are lengthy queues on the approach.
This is LBC.
At Amazon, over 50% of deliveries now come with less packaging, or with no added packaging at all. It's a difference you'll notice on your doorstep, where you chat with friends, where your neighbour's daughter practices guitar, and where we deliver your new noise-cancelling headphones in the manufacturer's packaging. Ah, much better. Reduced packaging from Amazon. We're delivering change where it matters. On your doorstep. Based on 2025 Amazon packaging data across the UK and EU.
This is LBC. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app. Download it now from your app store.
It took me less than 30 seconds to request my repeat prescription on the NHS app.
That's quicker than making this brew.
And I save time by not ringing the GP practice.
Win.
Plus, with notifications turned on, I know as soon as I get a new message.
Big win.
So there's more time for this tea break.
So did you go to that restaurant?
I did. It was so good.
We're delivering an NHS fit for the future. Request repeat prescriptions and turn on notifications to never miss a message. Tap the NHS app.
Oh, hello, love. Good day.
Right. Thanks for joining this all-staff meeting.
It's just you and me.
So, I think that we need to revisit tonight's dinner plans.
Okay.
Busy day. A lot of KPIs. A lot of KPIs. Gonna need you to order some spaghetti, tomatoes, a bottle of white, and 2 sticky toffee puddings. Let's circle back after you've ordered an Uber Eats.
Sure.
When you've officed enough, Uber Eats, and get all your groceries delivered. Check out for terms and restrictions.
Tuesday night on the sofa, watching telly with Mum again.
Male walkers stay with the mothers for life.
This is the moment Stephen chose to speak to Barclays about Mortgage Boost, so he could borrow more with help from family or friends. We're helping first-time buyers get on the property ladder sooner. Search Barclays Mortgages. Barclays. Make money work for you.
Your home may be repossessed if you do not keep up repayments on your mortgage. Subject to application, financial circumstances and borrowing history. T's and C's apply.
Turn up your taste buds with Dolmio Intensified Pasta Sauces. From mild creamy garlic and black pepper, to bold smoky garlic and sun-dried tomato, and spicy smoked paprika and chili.
Woo-hoo!
Try Dolmio Intensified Pasta Sauces with serious flavor. Dolmio, yeah!
This is 40-year-old Kathy, mother of 2 and self-confessed telly addict.
Oh, look at you. That's brilliant. Well done.
This is also Kathy, working as part of a team to keep things calm at her local prison.
Come on. Listen, speak to me.
And helping someone's son write his first letter home in 8 months.
Well done, you should be really proud.
Thank you, miss.
An extraordinary job, done by someone like you. Search prison jobs now.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
9 minutes before nine is the time. Now, a dream holiday that turns into a nightmare, the trip of a lifetime that leads to a death. That is the reality of a trip for the mother of the person with whom we're about to speak. Lucy Ambrose, daughter of Jane Presley, died a number of years ago, 2023, after contracting a bacterial infection while on that dream holiday. Lucy Ambrose joins me now. Hi, Lucy. Thank you for coming on. Obviously, you know that we saw that very powerful piece in one of the newspapers. Just go through the details. Tell us a bit about where your mum went and why it was so special time of year for her. Morning.
Hi. Yeah, she went to Cape Verde, the Rio Palace Hotel, which was classed as a 5-star. She went for her 62nd birthday with a partner, and they were just really looking forward to going away. It was her dream holiday.
How long had she been saving?
Quite a while.
How long was she going for, Lucy?
It was for 10 days.
And why had she picked that location?
Just because she'd heard good things about it. She always wanted to go to South Africa, always wanted to go there. So, yeah, they just thought it'd look nice and be a good adventure for them both.
But what happened?
Unfortunately, she fell ill when she was on holiday, but she didn't actually inform me and my sister until she got back, and then she just took a turn when she was home, and that was it then.
So tell us about what were the symptoms that she experienced while she was away?
Well, she didn't tell us she was ill when she was away. She kept that to herself till she got back, but it was gastric stuff, so she couldn't keep anything down either end. So she was very weak when she came back, and she just couldn't eat or drink.
What was her state of health prior to departure?
She did have COPD, but she managed that really well. There was no concerns with it or anything. She knew how to manage it. She'd lived with it for ages. So.
That's the pulmonary disorder, is it? The one you
mentioned? Yes, yeah.
Okay. What sort of medication was she on?
She had inhalers and blood pressure tablets, but that was about it. She had, like, her COPD rescue pack when she needed it, but she didn't need it when she was away.
So she comes home. What is her state of health when she gets back?
She's very wheezy when she got back. When she filmed something for me, you know, you could hear was her breathing in the background, and then she would ring and just say that she can't keep anything down. And in the end, me and my sister both told her that she needed to go to the doctors.
And how long into the holiday was it when she fell ill?
She fell in for a couple of days when she was there, and then she felt a little bit better, but then when she got back, it came on again.
Now, she's not the only person, of course, to have experienced problems. Since your poor mum, 5 more Britons have died after holidaying there.
Yes.
What do you think is going on?
I don't know. I think something needs to change. I mean, it's been, 4 deaths since August 25 to November. That's a large number. It should have stopped after my mum's death. I actually wrote a letter to the Foreign Secretary asking for answers as to why people are still being able to travel to here. There's no warning on the government website about the deaths. There is just no information for people at all about the deaths that are happening there. We tried to raise it the first time by doing interviews, but it's still happening.
And what do you think should be done, particularly by the government? What should they be doing, would you say, Lucy?
There needs to be warnings for people. They need to know what they're going in for. Like I said, I googled, is it safe to travel to Cape Verde yesterday? And there was nothing on the website saying that there had been deaths there. And I think that should be one of the main things that people know, that people are dying after going out there from contracting this bug.
Your mother was 62 when you lost her. She came back for about 3 weeks. Did she ever comment on what she thought happened over there?
She just said she wasn't going on holiday there again.
But did she say she thought the food or the water or whatever, did she imply anything, Lucy?
She thought it was from over there, and the doctors at the hospital thought it was a bug that she'd picked up while she was away.
Lucy, thank you for coming on and making that warning about this particular holiday destination. Lucy Ambrose is the daughter of Jane Presley, who died in 2023. We need to tell you there's a statement from the holiday operators TUI. Our thoughts and sympathies remain with the Presley family. As this is now a legal matter, it would not be appropriate for us to comment further. And a statement from the RIU, or RE Hotels and Resorts, they deeply regret all losses and want to express our most sincere condolences to the affected families. The health and safety of our guests is always our main priority. We've got a call on this. Jenna in Ascot. Jenna, so you, I've got two pronunciations. It's either Cape Verde or Cape Verde, but you went there, did you, Jenna?
No, so it was my mum.
Your mum, I'm so
there.
Sorry.
So what my parents to... went there. So my mum went to Cape Verde in 2004. She was staying in a hotel. They had no running water for the first 5 days of their holiday there.
How did they wash?
They couldn't. So my mum sent us emails and messages saying that they were having to wash in the sea. You know, people were using the pool to wash.
Oh.
But they couldn't wash at all. She fell ill, obviously, with gastric. It was inevitable with no running water. She'd also reported things to the reps, such as the food wasn't very warm and things. And she passed away on the flight home from Cape Verde.
Oh, I'm so sorry. When was this, 2024?
Passed away on the 3rd of May, 2024.
Oh, I'm so sorry. There was a post-mortem, I assume?
There was a post-mortem because there was no real medical history for my mum, so she didn't have anything that we knew of.
How old was your mother?
She was 71.
And no existing health conditions of any concern?
She had no existing health conditions that we were aware of at the time. It turns out from the post-mortem that there was an underlying heart condition, but actually the post-mortem recognises that she was poorly. She had a gastro flu while she was away, and it has kind of alluded to the fact that this would have maybe exacerbated the heart condition that she had.
We
didn't know about.
Goodness me, so she's one of the five that are mentioned in this newspaper article then?
She's not one of the five, no. We've not done any press or spoken to any media until I just heard that caller on the radio, so I thought I'd call in.
So it's now at six. What communications did you have? I appreciate she was bathing in the sea, which is all people... But did she enjoy any of the holiday? Was it practically a write-off from the moment she got there?
It was a write-off from the minute she got there. It was, it was... From the moment they got there, they had no water.
Nice.
They asked to move room. They weren't told that there was no water in the hotel. They kept being told it'll be on later today, it'll be on tomorrow, and eventually they told them that there was a water outage on the whole island.
Sorry, how long was your mum there, did you say? Was it 2 weeks?
There for 7 days. So it was 5 of the 7 days they had no running water.
What did the tour operator or the hotel or both of them, what did they say?
Well, so what we obviously dealt with the hotel afterwards, and they were very unsympathetic to the situation. I mean, they were quite blasé about it. They offered kind of £157 compensation for not having running water. But, you know, it was really insensitive. They offered my dad 20% off his next holiday, which was ridiculous. They were just completely insensitive. It was just as if for a long time they refused to talk to anyone but my mum, so they were trying to contact my mum despite the fact of knowing that she had passed away on their flight home.
Oh dear God. Are you seeking legal redress?
We hadn't until we saw the press on this a couple of weeks ago, but that's when we really put two and two together, I think, for us. I think we were trying to It's quite difficult to think that this potentially could have been, you know, it wouldn't have happened. It was avoidable, maybe. You don't know. So,
I'm so sorry for your loss. Lastly, what do you think? I mean, can I suggest there needs to be a government health warning about this place?
100%. And I think they're sending people over there. They know that the sanitation is not great. In my mum's case, they had no running water. They were still sent there. They weren't given an option to return home. And I think... they don't have the medical facilities, and that's the key thing for me, is that they're sending people over to a country where they know the sanitation is poor, and they don't have the medical facilities to support when people become ill. And I think that, for me, is where the danger is. They have to fly you 2 hours to Tenerife.
Oh, is that right? So they don't have what we would recognise as clinics or hospitals or doctors that are up to the level that you require?
Yeah, exactly that. No, they don't have that. And we've learnt that since in the last few weeks, but... So in some ways, for us, it was lucky that my mum didn't need any medical help while she was there.
All the years I've done this job, all the people I've interviewed, I don't think I've ever spoken to anyone who lost someone on a plane. That is just horrific for you and your family, Jenna.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks for calling in. Some of you are pointing out, I know that the daughter of the other victim said that it was in South Africa. I know it's in West Africa, but I think we can let that go, can't we? So some of you being really clever. Well, well done. You're talking to a grieving daughter. Hope you're happy with yourselves. Well, there really is a problem with Cape Verde or Cape Verde, isn't there? All right, move to other subjects. It's 1 minute after nine. Let's get the news headlines on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, Essex Police says it's assessing allegations that Jeffrey Epstein used private flights into Stansted Airport to traffic women. Nearly 90 flights linked to Epstein reportedly arrived or departed from UK airports between the 1990s and 2018. Stansted says it doesn't manage or have visibility of passenger arrangements on privately operated aircraft. American attorney Gloria Allred represented 20 of Epstein's survivors.
There are many, many survivors. There's alleged to be a thousand survivors, so I can't speak for them, all of them. I can just say, I think it's true that all of them have wanted justice. All of them, however, have been denied the kind of justice that they deserved, that they wanted.
Inflation fell sharply to 3% in the 12 months to January. That's compared to 3.4% in the previous month. The fall was driven in part by cheaper fuel prices. A government minister has rejected suggestions that the government is looking to slow down plans to pay adults of all ages the same minimum wage. Joe Stevens says the reports from anonymous briefings are not the government's position. Labour has promised to remove age bans as part of its manifesto promise, but there are concerns the higher cost of employing young people could put companies off hiring them. Chief economic commentator at the Daily Mail, Alex Brummer, has told Nick, youth unemployment is a big issue for the government.
I think for young people in particular, the real barrier at the moment is the way that people recruit. And the way that people recruit now is online. And I think that it requires you to make thousands of applications before you even get your foot in the door. And that's very upsetting, I think, for young people and very degrading for young people.
Ukraine's President Zelensky says Donald Trump's repeated insistence that his country makes concessions for peace is not fair. His comments come ahead of a second day of talks starting in Geneva. The US president has twice suggested it's up to Kyiv to ensure that discussions with Moscow are successful. And plans have been approved to build 7 new railway stations in Wales. It's part of a government commitment to modernise the rail network. Ministers say the project will support 12,000 jobs over the coming weeks and months. Work is due to start later this year, but there's currently no timescale for its completion. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 were trading up 55 at 10,611. The pound buys $1.35 and €1.14. LBC weather, dry across Scotland and northern and eastern England with some sunshine, outbreaks of rain elsewhere, a high of 11 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search Don't Get Caught Out.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning, 5 minutes after nine on Wednesday, the 18th of February. Decay is all around us, even with our children's rotting teeth. A 14% rise, 56,000 hospital extractions. We'll have more on that in just a moment. Plus, into London, rip-off fares, blaring music. And you won't believe what happened to one of our reporters when he took a ride in a pedicab. If you don't know London, I'm sure you know what they are, but they are such a damn nuisance. I'm sure we've heard moves that they were going to be stopped, restricted, thrown in the river, whatever it was. Nothing seems to happen. And problems if you're a dual national. You'll be barred from entering the EU if you don't have a UK passport. So, Karen Ochland is a British citizen now living in Norway with 3 children. Her family are one of many impacted by these new travel requirements concerning dual nationals, which many are saying have not been publicised enough. She told us...
At this rate, I've obviously got a mother and my kids have got a grandmother and aunties and uncles and cousins in England, and they won't be able to travel. They won't be able to travel to England.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 60 60973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Dentists report being horrified by a rise in the number of children who need rotten teeth surgically removed. There were, count them, 56,000 teeth extractions operations in England during 24 to 25, the last year for which figures are available. That's a little, hang on, 52, yeah, it's a little over 1,000 a week. This is for people aged 19 or below. That's a 14% lift on the previous year. Two-thirds of these operations were due to tooth decay amid a collapse in access to NHS dentists. That's my question to you, by the way, just so I'll give you a bit more detail on this. The question is, if you have a child or children, how easy has it been, or how difficult, or has it been impossible to get them registered with an NHS dentist? Now, there'd already been a steady increase in the number of tooth extraction episodes, as they're deemed, since 2022. The chair of the British Dental Association talks about the horror of these. Well, let's speak with the British Dental Association. David Cottram is president and is a practicing dentist in Birmingham. Do we have an idea of a figure or a percentage of children who are experiencing some kind of problem, Mr. Cottam, trying to get to a dentist? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick, and thanks for having me on your show.
Not at all.
The actual figures have probably trebled in the last 10 years. Many people will have heard of these so-called dental deserts, which are increasing up and down the country.
Yeah.
All of which historically is down to a failed contract that we've been having to work with for 20 years now. So it's increased every year, but certainly in the last year it's got significantly worse. Part of it, I guess, is down to some of the strikes with anaesthetists and what have you. But the biggest, by far, majority has been the fact that more and more dentists have left the NHS because it's just not workable.
Well, let's get into that if we can. You say the contract is failing. Why is it failing? Question two, why are dentists quitting? I mean, I think I can understand why, but why are dentists quitting the profession?
Main factor, it's completely underfunded. It's been less real money than there was 10 years ago. The whole system and the way the NHS system works not fit for purpose the way it's set out, and dentists have had enough of having to compromise what they do. Unfortunately, many people are unable to see the NHS dentist because there just aren't enough around at the moment. So the government, we've been in negotiations with the government now for some time.
Is it this government or the preceding government as well, Mr. Cotton?
Well, I've been involved with the government since 2006.
Right.
When I was chair of the Mainers Practitioners Group, looking at contract reform. So it's at least this government is making more of an attempt. However, things are stalled, but there is going to be more availability for urgent care from the 1st of April, particularly, and increased funding on that. But until the whole system changes, you're not going to encourage the dentists who have left the NHS to come back.
How does it work? For a GP, he or she is paid per patient per annum. How are payments made by the NHS in the field of dentistry?
Well, I wish it was the same. Basically, you get paid for what you do on a scale of units of activity at three different levels. So, for example, if I took one tooth out, I'd get paid an amount.
Might I ask how much it is?
Yeah, it's equivalent of two units of activity. Now, two units of activity is variable up and down the country, but the average value is £35 a unit.
So you'll get £70 for taking someone's tooth out?
It's not just as simple as that.
You've got, I know. I mean, you know how much that is privately to have a tooth taken out? It's just fortunes.
Yes, exactly, yeah. With all the expenses, it's just not financially viable in many, many cases. And what I was going to say, if I took 10 teeth out, I'd still only get that £70.
Why? How? That doesn't make sense. How does it work like that?
No, it doesn't. Well, it was imposed upon us in 2006, which I think was the Labour government at the time. The whole Tory government was the same. And we are where we are now. So this is historical. And as I say, negotiations are ongoing. There will be some improvement. There's a long, long way to go yet before contract reform.
Lastly, obviously, I go to a dentist. I cannot imagine how much the kit costs at my dentist, my dental surgeons. And then there's the upkeep, and there's obviously the staff and the receptionist and the dental nurses and the x-rays. I mean, the only way you guys and women can survive is to do private work, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Or compromise and do a mix.
And then, so, of course, you can't help these poor kids. I mean, it's not these kids' fault, for God's sake. You can't, these kids can't get to see you because you can't, you can only take so many NHS customers, otherwise you're just going to, the business will collapse.
Yeah, in 2006, we only treated 50% of the population, and that's what we got paid for, and nothing has changed. In fact, it's got remarkably worse in recent times.
Lastly, do you see more of the country, to use your expression, Mr. Codham, do you see more of the country being a dental desert?
Yes. Yes, I think we've probably gone past the tipping point in many cases. So real reform is needed, keep the negotiations going, but fundamentally you need a huge injection of cash.
Really enjoyed our conversation. David Cottam, you're president of the British Dental Association. You are a dentist yourself in Birmingham. Now, the newspaper that covers this, and I need to mention they do have a campaign going as well, Dentists for All. It's the Daily Mirror campaign. They speak with one dentist who says, a colleague saw a 17-year-old who hadn't seen a dentist in 10 years. Therefore, he needed 28 fillings. 28 fillings. The total budget for NHS dentistry in England is £3 billion and hasn't moved since 2010. I remind you, the NHS budget is £3 billion a week. So £3 billion a week for the whole NHS, £3 billion a year for English, not UK, English dentistry. I mean, how do those figures add up? The answer, Nick, they don't add up. But let's talk about the 17-year-old who hadn't seen a dentist in 10 years. Hannah Love is a registered paediatric nurse and a parenting expert. Well, this poor individual, 17, hadn't seen a dentist since he was 7. No wonder there were that many problems, Hannah. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me on. And I couldn't agree more, really, with what David was saying a moment ago and looking at the whole bigger picture. I mean, it's been hot topic in my membership recently. I've got a parenting membership and we had a dentist come in to talk to the parents there. And all of the same questions were coming up because they don't feel that they've got anybody to turn to with these normal dentistry questions because you just can't have access to a family dentist. It's very difficult. And if you do, then you're in and out in a couple of moments for the whole family. And the education just simply isn't there anymore.
Noting you're not a dentist, but much is the same as opticians. They're looking at your eyes, but they can find other major health causes. It's the same with kids' teeth, isn't it? You're looking at their teeth, but actually it can indicate many other serious issues.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I was talking in my membership the other day when Millie came in, the dentist, and she was saying to us that they used to, when she trained, just look at the teeth as teeth, but now they realise it's the gateway to the whole body. I mean, your heart can be affected, your whole circulation can be affected, and tooth hygiene is just so vital from an early age.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that. Also, of course, this comes hand in hand with the fact that, sadly, we seem to be having a group of children who are getting heavy. We have an issue with childhood obesity, and we have an issue with a lot of sugar in kids' diets. It's a pretty toxic mix, Hannah.
Yeah, there's a lot of angles to this. Definitely education and nutrition. I'm also a nutritional therapist as well. That's my background. And I work, my main focus is baby sleep. And one of the biggest causes of tooth decay in toddlers is going to sleep and returning back to sleep on bottles of milk. And so that's one of the things that I really, really focus on in my community. And unfortunately, another statistic that have come out recently that Millie gave to my community was the biggest reason for unnecessary general anaesthetics in under 5-year-olds is now due to having tooth extractions.
Grateful for your time, Hannah Love, a registered paediatric nurse and a parenting expert. Those words are borne out by Dr. Charlotte Eckhart of the Royal College of Surgeons of England, saying, quotes, tooth decay is causing unnecessary pain, missed school days and avoidable hospital admissions at a higher rate in 2025 than the year before. That's the reality. If you try to find a dentist for your child or children, is it a dental desert, as the dentist was just saying? We'll drill down to that after this. 9:15 LBC News headlines, Dominic Ellis.
Official figures show inflation fell sharply to 3% in the 12 months to January. Essex Police says it's assessing allegations that Jeffrey Epstein used private flights into Stansted Airport to traffic women. And it's reported the government is considering slowing down plans to pay adults of all ages the same minimum wage. LBC weather, dry across Scotland and northern and eastern England with some sunshine, outbreaks of rain elsewhere, a high of 11 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. The M4 remains closed in both directions between junctions 11 at Reading and 10 at the A329M. And that's because of the ongoing works. And there are severe delays both ways and on the surrounding routes. Also on the M4, it's very busy westbound junction 89 at Maidenhead following an accident. In Eltham, Wellhall Road, which is part of the South Circular Road, remains closed both ways. At the Elephant and Castle, the Newington Causeway, which is part of the A3, is closed in both directions. And that's also after an accident. On the Underground, there are minor delays on the Bakerloo and Piccadilly lines, and Gatwick Express services are at a standstill again between Haywards Heath and Brighton following a signal failure.
LBC.
Sunlight's guaranteed over 50 plan gave confidence to Jane and Chris. With their insurance sorted, they're becoming naturists. Cutting loose in their birthday suits, feeling elegant and free. But when they answered the door, the postman saw more than he expected to see. Sunlight, a little confidence goes a long way. Affordable cover with a cash payout. Search Sunlight Cover today.
Premiums paid could exceed the payment. Full cover after 1 year. Ages 49 to 85.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. LBC.
Psst. Hey, dogs. Yeah, I'm talking to you. If you're tired of dry, tasteless kibble or slop that plops out of a tin, you're going to want to hear this. Butternut Box makes only the freshest dog food with juicy meat and tender veg. It's the kind of food that makes dogs, tongue out, running around the kitchen happy. Let's hope your human heard this too. Butternut Box. Fresh food, happy dogs. Try Butternut Box today and get 25% off your first two boxes. Offer available online in the UK and Ireland to first-time customers only.
It's the last chance to get yourself a ticket for tonight's Lotto draw.
It could be you.
Lotto. From the National Lottery. Rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
A Southern train is a place where you can wind down and catch up. A chance to let conversations flow and plans unfold. And swap doomscrolling for telling stories. Too good for the group chat. Make the journey part of the joy and save one third with off-peak group tickets at southernrailway.com. Terms apply.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Dental deserts, the reality for your children. The number of tooth extractions up 14%. We're talking tens of thousands. I mean, this is the figure that is extraordinary. I mean, this is ridiculous. I tell you again, the NHS as a whole in the United Kingdom costs £3 billion a week. And in most instances, that's money jolly well spent. Well done. The NHS England budget for dentistry is £3 billion per annum each year in England, and has been that for since 2010. Little wonder you can't find dentists for your children. Anne's in Liverpool. What's the story with you, Anne? Good morning.
Morning, Nick. Hello. How are you?
I'm not bad. Tell me about you, though. What do you do? Are you a dentist?
No, I'm a retired dental hygienist.
Oh, God. Why did you do that? Why did you want to look in people's gobs all day long?
I was in the Royal Air Force, and it just kind of happened, so yeah, and it's a fantastic job, you know. I think there's far more to it than people think.
Okay.
But my point here is, one of the biggest issues is education. When I was a dental hygienist a million years ago, we used to go into schools and do assemblies and invite parents in. I'd go to mum and toddler groups and explain, because 85-90% of dental disease, particularly dental caries, which we know as decay, is caused by diet.
Too much sugar?
Just sugar, yeah. Right, too much sugar and the bacteria, plaque bacteria that's on the teeth
So red wine's not a problem, is it, Anne? Just assure me of that.
Well, you know, in moderation, Nick, like everything.
All right, then.
But again, I think one of the biggest issues here, we've also got an issue with poverty. And it's far.
Were you in a poorer part of town up in Liverpool?
I wasn't actually, I wasn't. I wasn't working in Liverpool at the time.
Right, okay.
But it costs a lot more for a punnet of grapes than it does a pack of biscuits. And I think, well, it does, you know, and we can go and pontificate and say, you know, keep sugary things to meal times only. Mm. But if you can't afford those bananas and you're giving your kids biscuits or, you know, things to pacify them, no one, we've got no right to judge. I think the education is really lacking, and I think accessibility to dental care professionals, not just dentists. We have dental nurses who are qualified oral health educators. We have dental hygienists. We have dental therapists. You know,
what sort of age kiddies did you go in and see at school, Anne?
I did mum and toddler groups, Nick. I went in and did assemblies with primary school kids.
How receptive were they to the messages you were trying to get across to the toddlers and the mums, and the dads for that matter?
Well, thankfully, the British Dental Health Foundation has fantastic resources. So with the little kids, we had puppets that had great big teeth smiles and great big toothbrushes. Right. And it was just, you know, particular messages. Keep sweets and sugary foods to meal times only. Mm. Brush for at least 2 minutes twice a day. Mm. You know, really kind of basic messaging, but also for the parents. But a lot of time, it's just accessibility. Parents coming up and saying, you know, I really struggled getting them in the bathroom. Things like just get an egg timer to do the 2 minutes. Little hints and tips go a long way. But it's accessibility. We need to utilise our dental healthcare professionals, and we need to pay them this.
Oh, this is ridiculous. I mean, this idea of £35 per unit and an extraction is 2 units, i.e. 70 quid, that's absurd.
Well, dental hygienists and dental therapists are usually paid by the dentist per hour. And if I went into that politic, we wouldn't like it at all.
Really?
Because, yeah, because, again, the expectation is, you know, you'll see 20 patients a day for, say, £30-35 an hour, which, you know, when you've trained for 4 years, you know, they definitely get the money's worth out of the other dental care professionals in the business. And it's the same with dental nurses. It's a very poorly paid profession.
What's the worst case of dental decay you saw in a child, Anne?
It was when I was a student, actually, and I heard this screaming and crying.
Where were you? Where did you study?
I was actually in Liverpool in Liverpool at the time.
Right, go on.
And this child was shouting, "Mummy, mummy, where have all my teeth gone?" And they'd been into what we used to call a clearance clinic, and the decay was that bad they had to get all of their teeth removed.
What? How old was the kiddie?
I'd say 3 or 4.
They had to take all his or her teeth out?
Yeah. Yeah, and the other thing is, it affects so much of life, Nick. It affects speech, it affects saliva flow, it affects confidence, it affects eating. You know, if you think that your mouth is such a personal part of your body, it's so functional, and we don't value it enough, and it really, really needs to, the government really needs to invest.
Lastly, how often should you go and see your hygienist?
Every 2 weeks to keep them in a job. Now, it depends on your dental needs.
Tell you're from Liverpool. Quick as that. Well done.
It depends on your dental needs. Some of my patients used to come every 3 months, some every 6, some once a year.
Right.
But again, it's just understanding that prevention and education really should be at the forefront of dentistry.
Look after yourself, kid. Really enjoyed our conversation, and thanks for sharing so much. We'll come to more of your dentistry stories in a moment. Now, a story that's caused a conversation already, I understand, on LBC, is that dual nationals returning to Britain will be barred from entering the country without a valid British passport under rules taking effect next week. Yes, I don't know how quickly you can get a passport. I sense you can't get it in a matter of days. Now, previously, what are called dual national Brits had been able to use their second nationality passport to enter the UK, but the new ETA, Electronic Travel Authorisation System, starting on February the 25th, means this is no longer possible. So that is to say, just imagine, if you will, someone who's carrying a British passport and a Swiss passport, just picking that at random. He's been able to enter this country using his Swiss passport, but in the future he won't. Well, it's been nice knowing you. Lisa Minow is travel editor at The Sun. Why is this being changed, Lisa, and what impact might it have? Good morning.
Morning, Nick. Well, this is being changed because, as you say, of that electronic travel authorisation. This is a new permit that anyone who enters the UK has to have, and it's about controlling the borders, digitising our borders, understanding who's coming in and out of the country. Now, this has been being gradually introduced over the last year, but from February the 25th, everybody will have to have one to come into the country. What hasn't been as well known, and it's one of my very esteemed, fabulous colleagues, Simon Calder, he was actually warning about this on, you know, about January the 18th this year. I don't think there's been enough notice given. I don't think there's been enough sort of knowledge out there to let people know, and that's where this issue has come up, in that British nationals abroad simply didn't know that this change was happening.
What are readers to the paper or The Sun online, what are they telling you about this, Lisa? Massive concerns, I would imagine, if they're suddenly picking up on this living the other side of the world.
Well, that's it. This is exactly the problem, because there wasn't that much knowledge on it. I mean, we're talking about 1.2 million people that hold dual nationality. Wow. So it is a lot of people that are being sort of rather caught out by this, particularly if they are living abroad. Now, there is something else that you can do, which is a sort of a certificate of entitlement, which is £589
Good
that you
grief.
Can actually...
Does someone travel with you for that?
Exactly, you'd expect
you
that,
would,
wouldn't you?
You would, wouldn't you? Come with you on the flight. Yeah, go on.
Yeah, so, but that's the only option. So you basically... You either have to have a passport or you have the certificate of entitlement. Now, if you're a family living abroad, perhaps somewhere like Spain, you've got young children, getting a, you know, a British passport every 5 years, which you have to do with children, it's going to be quite an expensive cost. And, you know, from Brexit, unfortunately, you know, for a lot of people living in Europe, it was much easier and much more useful for them to use their European passport. That's no longer going to be the case if you are a dual national. So I think it's more just about the fact that this seems to have come out of nowhere for a lot of people. There wasn't that much education or information about it.
Lastly, this you quite rightly, you mentioned Brexit, but this isn't just our friends in Europe. This is Australia, Brazil, Jamaica. This is every country on the planet, is it?
It is, yes.
Including Ireland,
not just
by the way.
About Europe.
Even Ireland?
No, not Ireland. So if you're this impacts people who, everybody who, a dual national, apart, you know, if you're British or Irish, you know, that's going to be the ones it's going to impact.
But anyone else, you need to get onto it pretty quick.
Yeah.
Lisa, thank you. Lisa Minnow's travel editor at The Sun. How long does it take? Oh, here we are. It's already coming in. Doris, I'm a victim. I'm going through the naturalisation process to get a British passport. I think this is a money-making process. A passport costs £100. I'm so sorry. £100 for a renewal. I wonder, what's the first time? I have no idea. Do the new passport controls apply to immigrants, to illegal immigrants? Jane in Suffolk, I think you're having sport with you. No, you can't. We might pick up on that. But let's get another call in about dentistry. Mo's in Chelsea. Now, you're not a dental surgeon. You are a... Good morning.
Good morning, Nick.
What do you do?
I'm a plastic surgeon, Nick.
How's that working out?
It's working out very well, actually. I am still full-time NHS.
What bit of body do you work on?
I do everything, actually. Face, chest. Do a lot of post massive weight loss patients. So that's my super sub specialty, but I do everything.
What do you? Is this bariatric? Am I talking bariatric? No.
So bariatric is the surgery to help patients lose weight, and then once they lose their weight, you do body contouring surgery in order to help them with their functional problems when they have a large abdominal skin pannus, for example, that causes excoriations and things like that.
What do you do with it? Do you cut it off?
Yes.
Wow. And then stitch it up again.
And stitch it up again. It's a very glorified way of tailoring. And they look really nice afterwards.
Right. So that's what you do. But you want to talk about dental surgery.
Yes, sir. So, as you know, going to medical school, you have lots of dental friends, and we all graduated the same time, around 1999. Mm-hmm. And whilst, you know, all the doctors in training were plodding along and working hard, a lot of the my dental friends, 1 or 2 years after, they left NHS. And the main reason, Nick, was that they felt morally obliged to do so because... For example, if they knew that you could do a white filling and a black filling, NHS would only pay for the metal amalgam. And,
right. Okay.
You know, they felt wrong. So there's a 22-year-old young lady or man. We could do this filling, but we're actually not allowed. And if I do the white filling, you have to pay out of your own pocket. Ah. And there are lots and lots of examples like this. And eventually, it just made the conflict too much, so they left.
And that's, of course, the problem we heard about, people leaving the profession.
It is indeed. And the second comment I wanted to make about education, flossing, regular brushing and use of saline gargling, which is the cheapest version, is so underdone. I bet you, if you do a quick survey of your own family when you guys sit next to dinner one night, just do a hands-up show to see how many people do this regularly every night, you'd be very surprised.
Should you floss every night?
I do.
Do you?
And use those little tippity things.
Yeah,
to
my wife's obsessed with those. All over the place. Yeah.
Well, she's right to do so.
Mo, I've enjoyed speaking to you. Good luck with the work you do. Very challenging, but so important. If someone's lost some weight and they're feeling good about themselves, but then they take off their shirt or their blouse, good luck for the work you're doing. All right, Mike, come back and talk about dual nationals. Calls coming in on that. But also after the news...
There's going to be a huge crackdown on London's unruly pedicabs after I got kicked off one by a rider who ran a red light. I'm LBC's Joseph Draper with the details.
It's 9.30. Joseph's report will be after this. It's breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, here on LBC. The news comes from Dominic Ellis.
Official figures show UK inflation fell sharply to 3% in the 12 months to January. That's compared to 3.4% in the previous month. The fall was driven in part by cheaper fuel prices. Essex Police says it's assessing allegations that Jeffrey Epstein used private flights into Stansted Airport to traffic women. 90 flights linked to Epstein reportedly arrived or departed from UK airports between the early 1990s and 2018. And it's reported the government is considering slowing down plans to pay adults of all ages the same minimum wage. Labour promised in its manifesto to remove age bans and to increase the wages of 18 to 20-year-olds so they're paid the same as those over the age of 21. LBC weather dry across Scotland and northern and eastern England with some sunshine. Outbreaks of rain elsewhere, a high of 11 degrees.
This is LBC.
This time last year, Hassan was working in sales and spent his evenings gaming. Now, he's working as a prison officer.
You know what's coming out, it's not working. Let's just go in there.
He's tackled cell fires, got through to some of the most challenging prisoners, and helped support their rehabilitation. He's done things he once thought he was never capable of. But he still loves his gaming. An extraordinary job, done by someone like you. Search prison jobs now.
Looking for a fixed passive income backed by real demand? With ulezprosperity.com, you buy the car, we rent it from you for a set period. You stay the legal owner and we pay you up to £600 per month in fixed rental income. No hassle, no maintenance, no tenants. It's a straightforward asset-backed rental agreement. Visit ulezprosperity.com for conditions and to learn more. That's ulezprosperity.com. Simple, steady, secure.
A Thames Link train is a place where you can wind down and catch up. A chance to let conversations flow and plans unfold. And swap doomscrolling for telling stories, too good for the group chat. Make the journey part of the joy and save one third with off-peak group tickets at thameslinkrailway.com. Terms apply.
Attention dogs, this is not a drill. If your dinner comes in dodgy brown balls or smells suspicious at best, you deserve to know this. Butternut Box makes fresh dog food with ingredients you'd find in your human's fridge. In fact, some humans have even tasted it. For quality control, obviously. Anyway, let's hope your human was listening. Butternut Box. Fresh food. Happy dogs. Try Butternut Box today and get 25% off your first two boxes. Offer available online in the UK and Ireland to first-time customers only.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Let's talk this dual passport story. No sympathy from Andy. You should have one passport. Why should foreigners get special treatment? Well, in my case, Andy, it's because of an honour of my late father, who also had a Swiss passport. And it means a huge amount to me because it's a sort of link to Dad. It doesn't mean that I don't love this country. You know, if you've listened to me, you know how much I love this country. But it doesn't mean just because I've also have ability to carry a Swiss passport. This comes from Michael in Sydney. G'day. This has been a big issue and widely reported in Australia, capturing a whole group of people who were born in the UK, migrated to Australia as kids, never held UK passports in their life, suddenly needing to apply for UK passports. It costs more to renounce UK citizenship or get a residency certificate than to buy a passport. There's a lot of very unhappy people here. Michael, good evening, in Sydney. That residency certificate you talk about, I know I'm off mic, give me a moment, costs £589. Alex in Edgeware wants to talk about this. Good morning, Alex.
Hi, Nick.
What are you going to tell me?
So, I want to tell you, I'm a German-British dual national.
Okay. Born here or born there? And
Born here, and I guess when I first saw this, it didn't necessarily surprise me. Actually, in Germany, the rules are that if you're a dual citizen, you have to enter Germany on your German passport.
Okay. How do they know?
I'm not sure if they do actually know, but that is technically the rules anyway. Okay.
Yes. Well, Germans, they will obey the rules. Of course, they're very regulated people. They wouldn't dream of not. No, right, go on.
Of course. Anyway, I guess when I saw the headlines come out on this story,
yeah,
I was a bit worried that it almost made it, sound a bigger issue than I think it is.
Mm.
And I understand it could be stressful for people, you know, if they didn't know the rules were coming and they have to get a passport now, but is it so much to ask? You know, many countries don't even allow dual citizenship.
No, but I think you should tell the people. I mean, as I just read that text or email from Michael in Sydney. I mean, they know about it, but there's lots of countries that don't know this is going to happen, and I think that's what makes it a little unfair, Alex.
Yeah, I think, you know, I'm not sure. I'd seen it first in the news maybe a month ago.
Did you?
I'm not sure when you first heard about it.
But that would be this morning.
So, but, you know, I've also known of friends who've had issues when they've had to get a passport at short notice for various, whatever reasons, they've filled up all their stamps or whatnot.
Yep.
So it's not so unexpected to have to get a passport, you know, in an extreme case at short notice. And in the end of the day, the way I see it is that many friends that, you know, maybe don't have EU or British passports, they struggle to get anywhere. They have to get visas and this and that. The expectation to just get a British passport if you're a dual national doesn't feel like, you know, feel like a scandal anyway.
Lastly, Alex, how many years have you had your German passport? Was this a post-Brexit thing or you've had it for many years?
It was a post-Brexit thing.
I think a lot of people suddenly... And is it mum or dad or grandparents you have who are German?
Yeah, it was grandparents.
Grandparents, okay. Was it an easy process, lastly, or did you have to fill in... Were the Germans incredibly thorough about wanting to know everything about grandma?
No, I'd say I was very fortunate. The process was relatively simple, and it's obviously enabled me to travel a lot easier since. So.
Of course, to get through Europe. Alex, thank you for that conversation. William Garvey in Perth. Thank goodness I've got my Irish passport. I won't need the UK one. You won't. Because as Lisa Minogue from The Sun was telling us, the only country on the planet, obviously outside of the UK with this passport issue, is Ireland. So you can still enjoy unchecked, as it's called, ingress and egress from the to and from the United Kingdom. Rebecca's in North London. Rebecca, what are you going to tell me? Good morning.
Oh, hello. I just wanted to call you to give my view on it.
I think we're going to... Yeah, can we move you, Rebecca? I didn't hear all of that, and I've got headphones on. So while we move you, let's go to a story I've mentioned on at least a couple of occasions, and into London. I don't know, are there pedicabs in other... Oh, there are in Edinburgh. The only time I've ever travelled in a pedicab was within Edinburgh. Oh, gosh, over 10 years ago. So they are in other cities. Pedicabs. And in London, drivers will be banned from blaring music and ripping off tourists with variable fares after new regulations were laid out by TfL yesterday. The regulations come into force in October. I don't know why either. Will seek to stop drivers overcharging passengers for short journeys, disturbing local businesses and residents with loud music. By the way, have you or someone you know used one? Have you heard the horror stories of a tourist? And it's terrible if we start ripping off our tourists for a taxi fare that would have been about a tenner. And some oaf on a bicycle blaring music manages to charge about 150 quid. Well, LBC's reporter Joseph Draper decided to get in one of them, to see how the regulations might work. And he filed this report.
A common sight and sound of London's West End. These loud neon flashing rickshaws, known for blaring ABBA classics, have been whizzing tourists around for years entirely unregulated. But from today, new rules mean they'll have to apply for special licences, carry number plates and, crucially, cut the music after complaints about antisocial and dangerous behaviour.
Do you think some of these are dangerous or do you think they're mostly they're
dangerous?
Safe?
Dangerous. They'll be going down.
Yeah.
Probably three people do a sharp turn.
Yeah.
This thing will...
Have you ever seen that?
With tilt. It happened to me and I fell flat down pop.
Well, he's quoted me about £20 for a 10-minute trip, which I think is pretty steep, especially given he's just told me how dangerous it is, but we're going to give it a go, so wish me luck.
Just coming up to Trafalgar Square, there's a interesting rendition of ABBA playing. I feel like I'm the centre of attention in London today. I'm getting a lot of funny looks. Hello!
As well as having to pass English language tests, riders like this one will also need full DBS checks, safety training and a driving theory certificate, which might be a good thing.
Did you go through a red light?
No. Only third, only fourth. You're right.
Well, I'm pretty sure you just went through a red light.
Oh dear, that took a bit of a sour turn. You definitely ran through a red light on a very busy Trafalgar Square, but he wasn't having it. it's just booted me off.
I think it's fair to say it diminishes London's reputation as a tourist sector.
That's Chris Plummer, General Manager at Transport for London, which is introducing these rules. They'll also cap the cost of trips, and he tells me the £20 I paid is actually a pretty good deal.
I've seen an example where a 10-minute journey, someone's charged £408. That is the kind of thing that we need to get rid of.
And Rachel Blake is the MP for the City of London and Westminster.
What this is doing is putting in perfectly reasonable regulations so that tourists aren't scammed and so that the residents here in the very centre of London can live their lives peacefully.
But it's not welcome news for the dozens of pedicab riders here who will soon be turning off their speakers for good.
LBC's Joseph Draper reporting on events afoot with pedicabs. If you've heard of those rip-offs, do let us know. I think they're an absolute menace. I just make them illegal overnight. Gone. Done. Dual passports coming to you, Stuart. That's your name. Peter Roscoe in Western Australia. A disgusting money grab by the British government. I have Australian citizenship and passport. So for myself, whose British passport has expired, if I want to enter the UK, I can't use my valid Australian passport. Same subject. Jay in Boston, listening in the United States of America. There are six of us in my family, and we have 25 passports to get. What are you, Carlos the Jackal? That's incredible. Now, while 10-year passports are easy, when children are under 16 and on a 5-year passport, it's considerably more complicated. We've been using the ETA, that's Electronic Travel Authorization, to enter the UK over the past year. We'll now stop coming as a family, if the ETA won't work for us this summer. So there goes a few dollars that we could do with. Stuart's in Gothenburg. Hi, Stuart, what are you going to tell me? Morning.
Good morning. Yeah, I just thought I had to give you a call. I've literally just got off the phone with a passport agency.
to
basically see what's going on. So same as everybody else, found out, I think it was actually on the BBC website, that they were going to change regulations. So very quickly, as I have dual citizenship, I have to contact the British Passport Agency, renew my UK passport.
How easy is it to talk to the British Passport Agency? How long do you have to spend on the phone?
Half my life. It's been a lot of calls back and forth at the moment.
Right.
And then it's also, okay, you just get extremely mixed information. So long story short, sent in my British passport first of all, which is what they've initially said I had to do.
Yeah.
Then I find out that they need to have my Swedish passport because I have both.
They want the physical one, or you can send them a copy?
No, the physical one. So all original documents have to be sent, so I had to send that over too.
Oh.
Since they wanted to basically to compare my name to make sure that I had the same name in both documents, which is okay, I did that.
Okay.
Then I heard nothing, was told I had to send my birth certificate. And the problem is I moved to Sweden when I was 16 because my parents died and my brother lives here. So I moved out to stay with him.
I see.
Those documents I don't have. So then I was told I had to send another written letter stating that I don't have a British passport, don't have a birth certificate.
Yep.
Did that. And my query said, well, don't you have this electronic, this information? Oh, yeah, we do, but we need it in writing. So, okay, sent everything. Hadn't heard anything. Phoned up yesterday to find out what's going on. It turns out they've lost my Swedish passport.
Now, that would send me round the twist.
Well, yeah, and the best part was, I said, well, how do we process or how do we go forward? Oh, you need to get a new Swedish passport, then you'll need to send that to us.
Then we can lose that one for you as well, yeah.
Yeah, basically, and then I said, well, what happens regarding this process? They said, well, basically, you'll have to start again, so I'd then have to pay another £170 to restart the process for them to once again lose my passport.
And
so,
you can't go to the embassy in Stockholm or wherever the embassy
is? No, you can't. Don't quote me, but I think I have to go to Germany to renew my passport or something like that. It's a bit weird.
Sorry. So where are you now? Is it finally, after you spent half your life, you have resolved this now?
No. This is still a complete mess. What makes it harder is I have a sister who's quite sick in the UK, and I need to travel back as well, and it doesn't matter. I said this to him yesterday, said that there is a slight urgency with this. Oh, you can expect to wait 10 weeks. You know, it's just ridiculous.
And you've got no passport at the moment. You're passportless currently.
I am. Yeah,
I'm
basically,
so sorry.
Somebody joked me and said it might be easy for you to just go to France and jump on a boat and sail across. I was like, well, I do have a boat, so it could happen.
I know. Sadly, that is the truth. You can't wait 10 weeks. What are you going to do?
There's nothing I can do. You're literally just locked by bureaucracy. I also travel a lot in work as well, which also impacts my finances, because what am I supposed to do now? I have a Swedish ID card, so I can travel within the Schengen area, but if I need to go elsewhere, I can't.
Stuart, I'm so sorry, and you've got someone you want to visit back here in the UK. That's a terrible story. I hope there's a break. I can't see how there can be. That's why I asked. If someone asked me to send in their passport, the actual I'll send you copies, whatever you need, yeah. The physical passport? I'm really nervous. Thanks, Stuart. Derek says, as a dual national, I recently tried to renew my British passport. Because my British passport contains my middle name, they cannot renew it and suggest I change my name by deed poll. It's not working, is it? 9.45, LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
Inflation in the UK has dropped to its lowest level for almost a year. Essex police say they're assessing allegations that women and girls were trafficked through the UK on Jeffrey Epstein's private jet. And it's reported the government is considering slowing down plans to pay adults of all ages the same minimum wage. LBC weather dry across Scotland and northern and eastern England with some sunshine, outbreaks of rain. Elsewhere, a high of 11 degrees.
LBC travel, I'm Joanne Webb. The M4's closed in both directions still between junctions 11 at the A33 and junction 10 at the A329M. It's because of the emergency repair works. There are severe delays on the approach and on all the surrounding routes. Also, the delays on the M4 continue westbound at junction 89 at Maidenhead following an accident. At the Elephant and Castle, the A3 Newington Causeway is closed both ways, and in Eltham, the South Circular Road is closed in both directions following an accident. On the Underground, there are minor delays on the Bakerloo and Piccadilly lines. Gatwick Express services are now running between Haywards Heath and Brighton, but with various delays and cancellations after that signal failure from earlier this morning.
Coming up at 10 on LBC, James O'Brien.
Is it unreasonable to pay a young employee measurably less than an older one? And what's it like when your partner goes on the fat jabs and loses loads of weight?
James O'Brien at 10. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Big motoring world are big on choice. But what does that mean for you? Well, we have thousands of cars in stock. So let's say you want a Mini, an electric one, in black, with a panoramic roof, Apple CarPlay, heated leather seats, rear view camera. Yep, there it is. Being big means we're more likely to have the right car for you. Big Motoring World, we're big on choice. See website for nearest store.
Nick Ferrari now, 0345 6060 973, LBC.
Whether you still own it or not, if you had a diesel car built between 2009 and 2020, you could be entitled to compensation. Checking takes minutes at jointheclaim.com, and if successful, compensation could be worth thousands. Diesel emissions claims are still open for Ford, Nissan, Renault, Mercedes, BMW and Jaguar Land Rover. Don't miss out. Join millions of drivers across the UK. Check your vehicle now at jointheclaim.com.
Join the claim!
You know, people ask me, what's my good place? It's in the garden, playing football with my girls. It's also knowing that because my pension is with PensionBee, I get a beekeeper, a UK-based account manager for support should I need it.
You're not very good, Daddy.
At PensionBee, we believe that when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. Download the app or go to pensionbee.com and be pension confident when investing your capital is at risk.
The new single drops. The world tour begins. As artists create the music we love, you could be right there in the mix. Calling all young creatives. If you want a career in music, then listen up. Global Academy have a new 6-4 music production course. State-of-the-art studios, practical experience, hands-on learning with music professionals. Awesome! Apply now at globalacademy.com.
Mummy, please can you tell me a bedtime story?
Once upon a time there was a very tired mummy who'd been busy all day, and basically she was too knackered to cook, so she ordered herself sweet and sour chicken, special fried rice and some prawn crackers on Uber Eats instead.
That's not a very good story, Mummy.
Great ending though.
When you've done enough, Uber Eats and get your favourite restaurants delivered. Check out for terms and restrictions.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. Holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973.
Well, we we started something about this dual nationals. Everybody wants to have their say. Let's go to... I've got two Davids. I'll go to the David who's been... David the First in Manchester. You've been hanging on the longer. Now, we're talking about... How many passports have you got then, David? Good morning.
Oh, hi. Good morning, Nick. I have three passports. I'm a Canadian by birth.
Right.
And I have American and British.
Okay.
What happened to me once was that I got so confused which passport I was using when I went to the States that I used my British, and they immediately said, where's your American passport? They knew beforehand. Not only that, but they also knew I had a Canadian passport, and they wanted to know the circumstances of how I obtained an American passport.
So let's wind this back a little. When you applied for your ESTA, on your Brit, do you have to list that you have other passports? How were they? How did they have that knowledge? Is what I'm asking, David.
I have a British passport.
Yeah,
I don't have.
But how did they know? How did the border? They don't call it border force. What do they call it? Oh my God! When you were INS immigration, how did INS know that you had two other nationality passports? Do you imagine?
He scanned my British passport and he said, "Where's your American passport?" He said it.
Yeah.
I didn't, and I said, "Oh, I'm sorry. I by habit." He goes, "Can you not do that again, ever?" And I said, "Okay." So I gave him my American passport.
You know, again,
that was fine.
How do you think they knew that? That's what I'm trying to get at.
It's interlinked. They obviously communicate with each other. Each country probably has, you know, because it's the what's that called, the chip inside.
Yeah, yeah. Man or woman, then the INS person says, "But you got a Canadian one too."
Yes, and they said, we know you're Canadian, because they have that,
right.
Because on my American passport, it says I was born in Canada.
Okay. So when you left, were you flying into the U.S. from the U.K. or from Canada?
That's right, yes, from the U.K.
And had you departed on your British, so when you showed it to the
on my British, I left on my British, I
right.
scanned that. Right, I arrived and I had my British passport, so I immediately thought, okay, I'm using my. I didn't even think. I just gave him my British passport, and they said they immediately picked up on it and started to question me what my intentions were for doing that.
So, lastly, your a key question here is that a lot of people are saying they didn't know about the changes that come in next week for folks such as you with more than one passport. Were you aware? I know you've got a British passport, so it doesn't affect you, but were you aware of the changes?
I am aware of the changes. I think they should have given a little bit more notice. Mm. I understand. I think they stated it a month ago, but I think they should have given a little bit more time. I don't see a problem with using the passport that you come into the country if you are a citizen of that country.
Sure.
I think it's only right that you do that. But I understand why people are getting irate about not being told. That I understand. I think the government should have given a little bit more time. But I think whichever country you come into, if you're a citizen, you should be using that passport. If I go into Canada, I definitely have to use my Canadian passport. They definitely want me to do that.
Got it. David, thank you. Happy landings as and when you take off again. Another David in Castle Carey. David, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick.
Who are we talking about here? You have a...
It's our son. He was... we lived in the States about 25 years ago, and mm-hmm. he was born there, so by dint of that, he was registered and got a passport within 3 months.
Whereabouts in the US were you living?
It was California in Venice.
Oh, boy. That was pretty cool, wasn't it?
15 years of it, yeah.
Well, that'll do. Why'd you swap Venice for Castle Carey?
It's because when our son was born, it was decided that the wife decided we'd have him educated across in the UK. Her family are all university educated, so we could bring him back here. He was born in the US. He was registered within 2 days, and within 3 months, he got a passport.
What, as a 3-month-old baby, he had an American passport?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I've got a picture of him. I had to hold him up. He's got my hands in the picture while I held him up, and they took a picture. You don't travel on your mother's passport like you do in the UK.
How interesting. So have you... Sorry, how old is your son now?
He's 22 now.
Has he maintained his US passport?
Yes, absolutely, yeah. He's got his, what do you call it? It's not national insurance number, it's your, social security number.
So
he's got that. And he's an accountant, so he understands the tax implications. But also, because of, and within that 3 months once he was registered. And we were advised to do this by the consulate at the time on Wilshire Boulevard to register him as a UK citizen by dint of the fact we're both UK citizens, so that was fine.
Okay.
So he holds two passports, and whenever he goes to the US, he's been a couple of times, he fills out the form before you board. You have to fill out a form now. I can't remember the name of the form now.
Right. Is it the ESTA?
That's why they know. When he enters the US, he enters on his American passport. They do question him, so you're a dual national. They ask at the airport, the immigration guy will ask, well, you need to give up your British citizenship. And he said, well, I'm not doing it. It's a request, but it's not like a matter of law.
And every time they say you need
They say, oh, we don't like what it is. We don't like people to have two nationalities. Can you please can you please hand it? He says, well, no, I'm not handing it over. Also, if he ever did physically hand it over, he would just reapply for a new one back in the UK and say, I've lost my passport.
Where's the lad going to grow old? US or UK?
Well, he's currently studying as an accountant. He wants to go like forensic accounting, okay, when he gets a bit older and go chartered. But he's looking at possibly going across to the US and becoming a certified public accountant.
Okay.
There's a lot more money involved in it, so he wants to try and do that.
Okay. And he's aware of these passport changes, wasn't
he? Yeah, they came. We really heard about them a couple of days ago, and we sat down and discussed it. And there's a friend of the family who's an attorney, who's a solicitor, and immigration attorney, actually. And they said, well, carry on what you're doing. It's if he only held one passport, that would have been a problem, because then you'd have to apply for this, which costs close on £600. Because I'm looking at it from our viewpoint, we're not affected in the sense that we have to buy extra paperwork.
No. That £589 for a certificate, as opposed to a whole fresh passport, it's just a rip-off. David, best wishes to your son. Happy landings to him, as and when he travels. Thank you, David. Let's finish with What's Afoot with Pedicabs, our reporter going out there and hearing some pretty horrific stories. Michael's in Mayfair. Michael, what do you do for a living?
I'm a cab driver.
How's that working out?
Slow at the moment, half term,
Oh, of course it's half. I wonder why London was quiet yesterday. Thank you. The pen has dropped now.
I met an American couple in the cab, and they said to me, oh, we took a pedicab. He said £20 cash, no problem. Mm. Oh, you have to pay by credit card.
Mm.
Handed over the credit card. They said to me $1,900 were taken out of their account.
Oh,
when
no.
I told the story to the next American couple in the cab, and they said, oh, we couldn't find the cab, Shaftesbury Avenue to Westminster Hotel.
Right.
We got you the pedicab, paid cash, £125.
What would that be in a London taxi?
Well, it's only behind Parliament, Westminster Hotel, Shaftesbury Avenue to Parliament Square, £15.
As a professional driver on London streets, what do you and your taxi driver friends, what do you say about... I find it quite incredible that Mayor Khan hasn't clamped down, never mind the rip-offs, which is inexcusable, just the whole safety. It means astonished they're still allowed to trade.
Well, yeah, they've been going on for, 25, 30 years?
I don't know, you'll know better than I.
And also, it's the music. When they blare out that music all summer, I mean, you can hear them a mile away.
I know.
Drives you mad.
Stay safe on the roads, Michael. Thank you. I might see you later down. I'm out in cabs today, so I might catch up with you. There's not a lot of trade around. I'll do what I can. I'm done. If you've missed any of today's show, you can listen back on our free Global Player app or the LBC app, where you can also stay up to date with all the latest news, videos and opinions. Download the official LBC app for free from your app store now. That's it. James O'Brien's the other side of the news on LBC. I'm back with you tomorrow morning from 7. Meantime, stay safe.
Thank you, Nick. The time is approaching 10 o'clock, and I love this story. I do hope we can do it justice. When I tell you that ministers, as you already know, are currently planning to pay adults of all ages the same minimum wage, I think you, like me, will immediately start thinking of an employment period in the dim and distant past, depending on what age you are, when you were younger than almost all, if not all, of your colleagues. And looking back now, you're fairly confident that you were more productive or that you actually worked harder. And given that we're talking about minimum wage, service sector and retail are going to be particularly prominent. So I start off thinking this is perfectly fair, and then the old bloke inside starts thinking it's outrageous.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, inflation in the UK has dropped to its lowest level for almost a year. The main rate, which is measured by the Consumer Prices Index, fell to 3% in January, down from 3.4% in December. It means that most prices are still rising, but not as quickly as before. Christian May from City AM has told LBC it could also be good news for those hoping for a cheaper mortgage.
The government will be able to say, look, interest rates are coming down. It's good news if you're on tracker funds of mortgages, for example. It's going to help the supply of mortgages, which the housing sector desperately needs. And look, inflation is coming down. It's coming down at this dramatic rate. So aren't we doing well? It's worth noting still, I think, by the way, that 3% inflation is still a full percentage point above the 2% Bank of England target.
Four UK police forces are now looking into claims in the Jeffrey Epstein files. Essex Police is looking at suggestions that the late sex offender used his private jet to fly women in and out through Stansted Airport. Stansted says it doesn't manage passengers on private aircraft. The government is reportedly considering slowing down plans to pay adults of all ages the same minimum wage. Labour promised to remove age bans and to increase the wages of 18 to 20-year-olds so they're paid the same as those over the age of 21. Ministers have ruled out a reversal in the election promise. Tina McKenzie is from the Federation of Small Businesses and says smaller employers can't cope with much more.
National insurance is up. Business rates are up, statutory sick pay going up, employment rights getting widened. If they think that small employers can handle all of that, as well as the increase in the minimum wage, then good luck.
Thousands of pharmacy owners have written to the Health Secretary, warning that they risk imminent closure due to financial pressures. The National Pharmacy Association says branches in England are closing at a rate of one a week. And pedicabs in London are now regulated for the first time. It follows complaints about bad driving, overcharging and antisocial behaviour. Transport for London says drivers will now have to have a licence, pass a safety test and hold a driving theory test certificate. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 75 at £10,632. The pound buys $1.35 and €1.14. LBC weather dry across Scotland and northern and eastern England with some sunny spells. Outbreaks of rain elsewhere, a high of 11 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible, and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search, don't get caught out.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Good morning. It's 3 minutes after ten, and I think that this is a good old-fashioned phone-in. We haven't had one of those for a while. A simple government proposal to raise the minimum wage for people under 21 to the rate that people 21 and over currently receive. It's a difference of £2.21 an hour, which if you're on £10 an hour, as 18 to 20-year-olds on minimum wage currently are, it makes quite a difference over the course of a whole shift. And we're not at our best when I just come on the radio and say, well, what do you think about that? But equally, some days it is a question you can answer more or less immediately. I wonder what are you thinking about now? So I say to you, should young people in the workplace get paid the same as older people? Should everybody doing the same job get paid the same wage, or is there a case for paying 18 to 20-year-olds less than a 21-year-old or a 22-year-old? Just because the arguments that are trotted out by wealth or business owners, and of course they're not the same thing, plenty of business owners are far from wealthy, but they are, if you like, in charge of the capital. Just because the same arguments are trotted out all the time by largely the same people doesn't mean that they're always wrong. You'll remember when they introduced minimum wage, everybody was about to go bankrupt. When they, every single time that governments try to do something to improve the lot of the average worker, there is uproar across the print media because they have all got tame think tanks in their back pocket who will jump up and down to complain. Business can't possibly afford that. But it doesn't mean that it's always false any more than it's clearly not always true.
minimum wage introductions, minimum wage legislation, has not brought about the commercial Armageddon that was predicted by all the people who are currently complaining about plans to raise the minimum wage for 18, 19 and 20 year olds. Am I making sense? Do you see what I mean? It may be true that this would be a bad thing to do. I don't want to conduct the phone in from the perspective of the workers up the workers and bosses down with the bosses. What you want to happen is for the relatively high numbers of young people who can't currently get work or who aren't in work to find it easier to get work. And I can understand why. I think I can understand why. Can I understand why? Increasing their minimum wage would make it less likely for them to find the jobs that are currently going to the people who are not getting paid the minimum wage. Do you see what I mean? You see why it's a little bit, it could be a little bit trickier than first impressions allow. But when I ask you that question, should the youngest members of the workforce get paid the same as everybody else, what do you immediately think of? What story, what period of your life, what moment are you immediately thinking of? When you compare the job you did as a school leaver or perhaps still as a student to what the job being done by older colleagues was. See, I'm going to come up with a strong opinion by 10:15, but at the moment I haven't actually got one. Because, well, so there was this bloke, right, when I worked in retail, my last job in retail. I had several. And he was obsessed with the fact, I mean genuinely obsessed, to the point that he would show me his payslip every month. He was obsessed with the fact that his taxes were paying for my university education. And he hadn't gone to university. And he felt it was hideously wrong that he should be paying for me, who was already from a more privileged background than him, to be going to university to enhance my employment prospects moving forward. And I don't know if you had many moments like this when you were young, but it did actually prompt me to rethink my politics a little bit. I know I grew up in a very different world from the one that 19-year-olds inhabit today. My university education was more or less free. I owed some money. I had some loans for maintenance and things like that, but nothing for tuition or anything like that. A different world, almost unrecognizable to people aged 19, 20 listening to this today. But that's what it was like for us. That's what it's still like for a lot of people in other countries. And if you were older than me, you didn't even have to borrow money. There wasn't even a student loan system for your maintenance. That would be provided by the local education authority after some rough means testing on your parents' income. But I remember this bloke. I remember his name. I remember his jewellery. He used to wear big, clunky bling. He was one of the first people I encountered. Big signet rings. So Andy Hughes was talking to us. Not that kind of signet ring, but like sovereign rings. Working in a very posh menswear shop. And he cut a certain dash. He had a certain elan. And he was routinely one of the highest earners when it came to commission. But guess who else was? Me. And I got paid an hourly rate that was much less than his because I was 19 and he was 50. And at the time, I thought that was probably unfair. The political change that he brought about in me was not the nothing to do with the fact that we were paid differently. It was the fact because I thought he kind of had a point when it came to the tuition fees. I shouldn't go, I've got to stop doing this, Keith. Someone should be in charge of this program. I can't go off on a tangent about tuition fees and class and privilege and background. It's got absolutely nothing to do. Oh, Lord, I'm doing the weave. It's got absolutely nothing to do with the conversation that I want to have. But you know how my brain works. I'm suddenly more interested in that than I am in that. So we'll park that for another day. But I'm thinking of him, and I wonder who you're thinking of. What moment in your life are you thinking of now when you address the question of whether or not an 18-year-old, 19, 20-year-old in the workforce should get